the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! What a great run! He's in trouble. He is dropped. Kyle Williams dropped it. Oh, baby, what a hit. Tyrod looks. Tyrod on the run. Nobody in front of him. Touchdown! There's T-Mobile.
He's going to come through.
Sammy in the end zone. Got it! Got it! Touchdown! Sammy Watkins, touchdown, Buffalo! McCoy, much to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5, touchdown!
From One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Hello there. Welcome to the show, the John Murphy Show. We're coming to you live from One Bills Drive on this Wednesday afternoon, Wednesday that feels like Tuesday. We won't go into it, but here we are in the middle of the week with a pretty good show plan, and we hope that you participate as well. As usual, the phone line's open at 803-0550, and from outside Buffalo, it's a toll-free call at 1-888-552-550. John Murphy alongside Donald Jones, my co-host on the show. 8 days away now from round one of the NFL draft. I have to admit, I'm getting kind of excited about it.
Are you?
We talk about it for so long, and then you get this long build-up and run-up and so much information about the draft, so much discussion, chatter. Everybody's got opinions, and here it is. We're only 8 days away. I like that.
And what goes on here? They have one of those big parties in the field house?
I believe that's the plan, yep, for premium ticket holders and season ticket holders. They have parties inside the field house.
Okay.
Right outside the door here during the draft.
I don't think I've ever been here actually during the draft. I was always back home.
It's exciting. I have, you know, for the simple reason that you're adding talent to your roster.
Yeah.
I think the draft is by far like a celebratory event. You know what I mean? I think it always feels good when you get to the draft as far as, you know, you look to the future. Like,
you
look at these guys, accomplished guys that we managed to put on our roster here. You know, it's like the future is wide open for that one day.
You know, it's crazy because these guys get drafted, and we were talking about this yesterday with Steve. You know, back in when Steve was playing and guys get drafted, you do look to the future. You look to, okay, in the next couple of years, this guy is going to be a baller. But now, in today's football, it's like you want this guy to step in right now and be a baller, you know? And it's kind of like you put so much pressure on these rookies coming into the league, and people don't really understand how hard it is to make that transition from college football into the NFL. And it's hard because you have guys that have successfully done it in their first year. So we put those expectations on every rookie coming into the league, especially these guys in the first round with the money that they get paid and everything now. It's like, when you get here, we need you to be a starter right away, and it doesn't work out like that for
everybody. Don't you think most of us, I'm guilty, look at the draft and look at your first two picks, no matter who they are. And for the most part, you think those two got to start right away this year.
I think two
first-rounders. Even Ronald Darby, who walked in here as a second-rounder and got into the starting lineup.
I think we all look at those first two, sometimes even the third, you know, depending on who that person was. He might have slid down as, you know, you want them to come in here and be able to help this team right away. Even if not a starter, you want them to be able to get into a healthy rotation and help out right away. But we do have to kind of manage the expectations on these players because they are rookies. And it is not an easy thing to transition into this league. It's really not. They're dealing with so much more. They now have money. They're so young. That there's so many things that they have to deal with in their rookie year. Oh, by the way, they haven't had a chance to really rest coming out of their last college football season. You know, they went straight into combine training, straight into everything, and now you get straight here. And you're going straight to work. So you got to manage these expectations, just hope that these guys can come in here and be good.
And the converse of that, the flip side of it, is if you're an early pick, first, second, maybe even a third rounder at some point, if you're not playing, people are going to say, get rid of them. What a terrible pick that was. Some guys take longer than others to develop.
They do.
And, you know, it's hard in the – who was one of our coaches used to call it a microwave league, but, you know, you want everything instantly. I want this guy drafted and in the lineup and playing his potential right away. That doesn't happen with everybody. Those cases are rare, and there has to be some element of player development no matter where you're picked in the draft,
right.
I believe.
And it's no matter where you're picked, no matter how athletic, how good you might be, you still have to really develop into playing in this league. Like, you can be the best quarterback coming out, but guess what? You still need – some time to develop, a year or two to develop. You can be the best cornerback. We keep talking about these cornerbacks. Well, they haven't faced the talent every single week that they faced in college, you know, so they have to get used to, this week I'm going to face another dude that's an all-pro wide receiver, you know, and last week I faced a dude that was all-pro, whereas in college you might face a guy who might have been like All-American one week, but then the next week this dude shouldn't even be at this college because he sucks. you know, for lack of a better term. So they have to really get
there's
used to.
There's got to be a better term, by the way.
I'm sure there's a better term. But, you know, these guys really have to get used to playing every week in this league and get used to studying their playbook and get used to not just being a good athlete but being a good pro, a good – like, and there's other things off the field that you have to deal with as well.
Sure.
You're a first-rounder. You're going to have crazy media obligations. You're going to have endorsements and all types of stuff that you have to deal with. A lot of these guys sometimes, I mean, they just don't know how to manage everything and still be a very good football player on the field trying to learn this league.
21 years old.
Exactly.
So what's going on here at One Bills Drive today? Well, we await the draft 8 days away, and we'll talk about the draft today. The players are on the other side of the wall over there on day two of the voluntary veteran minicamp. That's going on right now, the voluntary veteran minicamp, day two, one more day coming up tomorrow. They are just about wrapped up with their morning little session on the field. Little break coming up, and then back on the field for about an hour and a half. So that's on the other side of the wall. We are not able to show you that. And really, a lot of us are waiting for a decision on what the Bills do with Mike Gillisley. The news came about midway through the show yesterday. The Patriots, the New England Patriots, extended an offer sheet to Bills running back Mike Gillisley. 2 years, reportedly worth $6.4 million, $4 million in the first year. And the Bills have 5 days to decide whether to match the offer. That makes it Monday. They can match the offer. If they do, they're on the hook for Mike Gillisley for $6.4 million over 2 years, $4 million next year. If they don't, they let him go, and they pick up a fifth-round draft pick. That's our Twitter poll. That's what we want to get from you. What would you rather do with Mike Gillisley you know, moving forward? If you were the Bills, what would you like to do with Mike Gillisley? What should they do? Give us your thoughts on that. The phone line's open at 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-552-550 or via Twitter. We offer you a couple of options on our Twitter poll, and it's just up and running now. What do you like? What would you rather do with Mike Gillisley? Would you like to see the Bills match the Patriots' offer, which means they're on the hook for $4 million this year for Mike Gillisley? Or would you like to see him let Mike Gillisley walk away and take a fifth-round draft pick? Just getting started, but so far pretty overwhelmingly people say take the fifth-round pick, walk away from Mike Gillisley. Just 28% say match it and keep him on your roster.
Yeah.
What would I do? I would take the fifth-round pick, Donald, and I wouldn't even think about it that very deeply because, look, you know what the deal is here. You know, fifth-round pick has value, but aside from that, they put a value on Mike Gillisley, and it's not $4 million this year. And and even when you look at it from the Bills' perspective, it's not the, $2.6 million it would cost if they put a second-round tender on him. They could have put a second-round tender on him. They could have put a first-round tender on him.
Mm-hmm.
Would the Patriots or anybody else extended an offer sheet if there were a first- or second-round tender? Likely not.
Probably not.
But, you know, that's the risk the Bills took, and this is what they're ready to live with. This did not sneak up on them. Let's be clear about that. This is not, whoops, we didn't think anybody would offer to him. I think it was a calculated move. I think it says something about the way they view, and I'm talking about the Bills' decision makers, the way they view Mike Gillisley's value. And they are the ones who get to assign what they think the value is. They can't follow what the Patriots think his value is. They can't follow what anybody else thinks his value is. And our buddy Sal Capaccio did a little research and wrote a pretty good post that's up on WGR.com. Only two other NFL teams, Sal points out, have the second highest paid running back is paid, you know, $4 million.
I mean, over
$2 million. Yeah, that's right. What I meant to say.
Yeah.
Only two other teams. That's significant. You don't want to have a lot of money tied up in your second, your backup running back. And I think that's important to point out here. They've got a lot of money tied up in Shady McCoy. I think he's worth it. They have, you know, a pretty capable backup the last year and a half in Mike Gillisley. You don't want to tie up a ton of money in Mike Gillisley, your second round, your second backup or your second running back on the team. Only two teams, this is Sal's research, only two teams are paying their second highest paid running back more than $2 million a year, the Eagles and the Jets. Do you want the Bills to be number three? Isn't that allowing the Patriots to dictate the value on Mike Gillisley?
Exactly.
That's why you put that tender on him, the original round, the fifth-round tender, and not a second-rounder.
You know, that's what I meant yesterday when I said you don't want to be the one that's chasing in terms of money because you're allowing another team like the Patriots to dictate how you value your players.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're allowing them to dictate your cap space. You know, if you decide – okay, well, now we got to go ahead and match this guy, or we should have just go ahead and put a second-round tender because if we don't, the Patriots might come in and steal Mike Gillisley because they have a history of coming in and taking the Bills players.
Do
well,
they?
What do you? I mean, I don't know. That's
another point. Finish your point, because I want to talk about that. I don't know that they do. They got Hogan last year, and they've extended an offer to Gillislee. But go ahead, finish your point.
So if you get into that situation, you're letting the Patriots dictate everything that you do. All right, the better teams, like you talked about, you put a value on your players. It doesn't matter where everybody else values your players. It matters where you value that player. And if that player wants to get outside that range, you don't pay him. If another team comes in and they give him an offer sheet, well, guess what? You got to let him go and take the compensation for it, because it just, like you said, backup running backs are not getting paid that type of money. For me, you don't pay backups that type of money, especially running backs. The starting running backs are having trouble getting big contracts in this league. So why would you go and then pay a backup running back $4 million? It just doesn't make sense, especially when you have Shady, who is making, what, like $9 million this year? Something crazy like that. So you were talking about $13 million tied up in your running back room. It just – that doesn't make sense.
So in terms of our Twitter poll, I think we're in agreement here that we would not match the offer, right? We'd let him go and take the draft pick. But let's hear from you. The phone line's open at 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550, or via Twitter at John Murphy Show. And, look, I hear the arguments about, hey, the Bills, though, are a run-based team. Don't they need Mike Gillislee to keep that going? You know, what they really want to be, I think, is a more balanced offensive team. So, yeah, Mike Gillislee has value. They have established what they think his value is, and that's what the tender offer was. That's exactly what the tender offer was. And, again, this didn't sneak up on them. I feel very confident saying they knew what was at stake. They knew what the odds were that Gillislee would leave or not leave. And they can't control whether it's the Patriots or the Jaguars or the Tennessee Titans who extend an offer sheet to him. The fact that it's the Patriots, I think,
that's
is what has
it.
Many Bills fans
that's
you know,
what,
rubs
that's
in the
what
wrong
it
way.
Is, the fact that it's the Patriots. But like I said, man, you don't pay backup running backs that type of money. When the starting running backs are having trouble getting contracts in this league, why would you go and then pay your backup running back $2 million or over $2 million or even $4 million? That's not something that you do, and you don't allow another team to dictate – your value on a player. You don't allow that to happen. If they make that offer, go ahead and let them go, and you can find another running back that can do what Mike Gillislee was able to do. LeSean McCoy is your starting running back on this team, and unless Mike Gillislee, you felt like he was going to be a starter next year, then maybe you would say, all right, we can go ahead and put a second-round tender. But, you know, you even look at the Patriots, they put a first-round tender on Malcolm Butler because he is their starting cornerback. You know, you only put those type of tenders on your starters. If it's not a starter, you're not putting that high of a tender. It just doesn't make sense to do it. Yeah. I mean, you don't do that as a franchise.
And when you put that tender on, what you're also saying is this is what we're willing to pay this guy this year.
Right. We're willing to pay this guy, what, $3 million plus. And if another team wants to come in and give us a first-round pick, that's how you value that player. Like, he's a starter on our team. We don't want to let him out the building. So we're going to go ahead and give you a first-round tender. We'll pay you the $3 million. But if a team comes in and they want to give us a first-round pick, then you can go ahead and go.
Yeah.
We'll take that first-round pick. But you don't do that unless that guy is a starter and you feel like he can be a starter this year coming up and years moving forward.
And, look, I get the debate, and we hope we do talk with many of our listeners about this today. I get it. And, you know, we can talk about what the Bills' value is, and they have clearly delineated what they believe the value is for Mike Gillislee and what the Patriots view his value as. And, of course, the strongest argument is, well, the Patriots win Super Bowls, the Bills don't. So maybe they got the right value. Maybe they do. We'll find out.
Right.
But still, you can't chase somebody else's value rating on a player, any player, whether it's one of yours or one of theirs. You can't. You have to have a conviction in what you believe. Whether or not you're right, time will certainly tell.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk about this today on the show. We got a lot to talk about and a pretty good guest lineup. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, Leonard Johnson, Bills cornerback, who just joined the Bills after a stint last year in Carolina. He's out on the field right now with the rest of the veterans. And Leonard Johnson joined us to talk about this Buffalo defense, his role on this defense. That's coming up at 12:30. Coming up at 1 o'clock, 8 days before the draft, we'll talk with Dan Shanka. He's one of the men behind Our Lad's Guide to the NFL Draft, Our Lad's Scouting Services. Dan Shanka, one of the most reliable draft guides out there every year. I'm a subscriber. I have been for several years. There's no flashy pictures. There's no, the draft guide, look at it, Donald. It's all
words.
Data. It's all words, which is fine.
Words and numbers.
Yeah. Dan Shanka and his group have been putting this out for some 25 or 30 years. We'll talk with him about the draft coming up. Coming up at 2 o'clock, we're going to talk about New England, about the Patriots. They seem to be the center of the NFL universe today.
Man, yeah.
In the last few days, you got the Gillislee deal. Mm-hmm. You have James White. agreed to terms on a new contract extension late yesterday. You have, of course, the Patriots' visit to the White House today and the tragic news about Aaron Hernandez today. So
and Malcolm Butler.
And Malcolm Butler's deal. Yeah. So the Patriots in the forefront. We'll talk with Tom Curran of Comcast Sportsnet in New England coming up at 2 o'clock. In the meantime, let's hear from you. Phone lines open, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. Or via Twitter, the Bills and Gillisley. What would you do? Give us a call. Let us know what you think. We'll start with John in Buffalo. Hello, John. Welcome. You're on the show.
Hello, John.
Hi.
You know, in my opinion, I think the Bills ought to match that offer because what happens if Shady gets injured this year? Who's going to take over for him if Gillisley's gone? I'll hang up and listen to your comments. Thank you.
Okay.
John, I think, you know, they're going to either sign somebody else through free agency. I think they're going to draft one, you know, and that's who you have to look to if Shady goes down. Obviously, you need to be smart. You need to have a backup running back just in case your starter goes down. But you go into the season saying Shady is our guy, you know, and you draft one and hope that Shady can help to develop that guy. Oh, by the way, you still have Jonathan Williams. You still have Mike Tolbert who can step in. So I think they'll be okay.
Yeah. I mean, what if? It's a big what if, and you hope that that's not the case. I would dispute the notion that McCoy is injury prone. He struggled with, a hamstring mm-hmm. 2 years ago, and I think he missed one game last year.
Mm-hmm.
And he is, 28, going to be 29 or 29? Yeah, he's 28, going to be 29. So certainly he's on the back end of his running back career, but I don't think he's demonstrated that he's injury prone. He might get hurt. He might miss some time. That's why you have Jonathan Williams here. That's why you have maybe a draft pick coming in to take his place. A call here from Jonathan in Alden. Hello, Jonathan.
Hey, John. Hey, Donald. You made some good arguments, but I kind of agree that we should match it because you always talk about continuity, and I hate to see Gillisley leave hit the open market and with a blower draft pick on a number five pick. I mean, that's the kind of thing that led to this drought. So I think bash Gillisley and try to keep the continuity going.
All right, we don't always talk about continuity.
Yeah, we were just talking about that when the whole coaching thing was happening.
Yeah, you know, Gillisley has only been a year and a half. And
yeah.
He came off the street.
Off the street. And
so he's not like a foundational building block player.
Exactly. Oh, by the way, I mean, going into last season, he was one of the guys who was on the bubble of even making this roster. You know, so if you go from being on the bubble of making the roster to now giving you a second round tender or matching at $4 million for your backup running back, I mean, teams typically don't do that.
No.
You know, when you had a guy the year before who you didn't even know if he was going to be on your team or not. That's why they gave him a fifth-round tender, you know, because they didn't even know if he was going to make the team last year. Now, he still was going to be your backup. They weren't going to give him a higher tender than that. They were going to give him the tender of where he got drafted, which was in the fifth round. You picked him up off the streets. I mean, you know, if like you said, if this wasn't the Patriots that did this, we wouldn't even really be talking about
it. I don't
this,
think but. We would. A couple of tweets on this issue. Jenna Lee Galicchio says, this is a tough call. Want to say match just because it's the Patriots. With the draft being so running back heavy, having 2 fifth-round picks is a good thing. That would be three,
actually.
if they take the draft pick. Just because it's the Patriots. I think that's why people have an emotional reaction to this. Alistair Damas tweets, and take the pick, give us more depth in the draft. Running backs a dime a dozen nowadays. Yeah, maybe not quite a dime a dozen, but certainly you can get a good running back. Even in the fifth round, you can get a good running back.
I mean, you can get good players anywhere in the draft, even undrafted. Running back really is that position where you can get guys at any point in the draft. You can get guys undrafted that can come in and be solid complements to your starting star running back.
Bob Chimchak tweets in, looks like I'm in the minority, but I can just see touchdown Mike ripping our defense and cashing in a few touchdowns twice a year, any place but New England. There's the emotional response we talked about. Yeah, it's New England, right? No one wants to see them get any good players, and Gillisley is a pretty good player. But you can't build your team around that. And one more tweet, Eric Smeal. As much as I want to see him stay, the Bills have to start being more economical. And I think that's a good point. It's disguised in the 140 characters of a tweet. look, the Bill, you get in trouble with the cap when you start taking somebody else's value of who your players are. And the Bills did it with Ryan Groy. Not that that's going to get him in trouble, but that's an example of how the Bills decided to match because they valued him and valued him at that number. I don't even know what Groy's number was. But if you start chasing every time you're going to lose a player because somebody else has him ranked higher or has him valued more, that's how you get in trouble with the cap. That's how you wind up with, cap jail.
Right. And that's exactly how you get in trouble with the cap. you find yourself trying to chase other teams' money and stuff. I mean, you will get yourself in trouble like that. I think the reason why they matched Ryan Groy was because, you know, you have guys on the offensive line that are up there in age, and those guys you might not view as being here next, you know, in the future, very soon future. And this guy, Ryan Groy, can be a starter for less money for you in the next couple of years, you know. So Shady, on the other hand, is, you know, he's what, 28, turning 29, or he's already 29. I don't know his exact age, but you know, at his age, he probably still has a couple of years left in the tank, mm-hmm. and they will at some point have to find another starting running back. I just don't think you match that. I don't even know if Mike Gillisley was a solid, viable starting running back. I think, like, look at the game that he was the premier running back. You know, he had like 50 yards in that game. You know, it wasn't a good game for him. So you wouldn't come away from that game saying, oh, this dude is a starter on any team in this league. He still was a backup for you, you know. Now, obviously, yeah, he had, what, 8 touchdowns last year, a lot of short yardage stuff. He had a couple of big runs, so you can see him go once he breaks that first wave. But that doesn't mean that he's going to be a starter for you moving forward. No. Mike Gillisley is a backup on your team.
McCoy will be 29 in July, by the way. Here's a tweet from Matthew Marquardt. He says, we should have kept Hogan. We better keep Gillisley. But these are dumb decisions that management always gets wrong. No, I disagree. You should not have kept Hogan, not at that price. The Patriots paid him a lot of money, $4 million a year. The Bills didn't have him valued that highly. Hogan had 2 more catches for New England with that high-powered offense, with that pass-oriented offense with Tom Brady. 2 more catches with New England than he had the year prior with Buffalo. He had a huge game in the AFC Championship game. I agree. Let me just finish. Who knew that the Bills were going to have that many injuries at wide receiver? Could they have used Chris Hogan as it played out last year? Absolutely. But you can't forecast those injuries. So, no, I disagree. This is not, we should have kept Hogan, now we better keep Gillisley. No, I disagree on both counts.
I think what people are really missing in this whole thing is how much money the Patriots really had to play around with this offseason, which is why you see them make all of these moves, and how they feel that window really is closing on them, you know. And so it seems like they're really trying to stockpile everybody on their team so that they can win another Super Bowl, a couple more Super Bowls before Tom Brady retires and maybe even Bill Belichick, you know. So I don't think you want to get into a situation where you go ahead and match this, because it's like they're trying to, they just signed another running back to like a $3 million deal. Now you bring in Mike Gillisley for $4 million, and he's not even going to be the starter. We talked about this yesterday. Like, he's going to rotate with all of the rest of those guys. He might have games where he's not even suited up. Like, he might be a healthy scratch in some of those games. But the Patriots can do that because they had a lot of money. The reason why they had a lot of money is because they are very smart when they're making money decisions with their entire roster. They value their players here. If you want to get outside this, go ahead, go somewhere else. We'll find somebody else that can fit this system. And that's what they do.
Here's a call from Richard in Rochester. Hello, Richard. Go ahead.
Hey, gentlemen. I wanted to make a point about Chris Hogan and one about Gillisley. The one about Gillisley, people talk about dime a dozen for running backs, but there's one number Gillisley has that I don't see on any other resume for a running back, and that's 5.7.
Mm-hmm. And you know how that comes about, Richard. It's because he doesn't get a lot of carries. He hasn't. And he broke off a couple of big runs. That's why that 5.7 yards per carry is what it is. And he did that. He gets credit for that. But that's why that number is so high. You know, when
McCoy is 29 and the wall, as we know, is 30.
Yeah. Are you saying you keep Gillisley because he's a replacement for McCoy? I'm not so sure about that. You are?
Absolutely. Now that Chris Hogan.
Well, wait a minute. Let's talk about Gillisley. Are you convinced that Gillisley, if he got – so what did he have last year? I'm looking it up. He had 100 carries last year, 5.7. Are you convinced if you give him 300 carries, 250 carries, he's going to get 5.7 yards per carry? I'm not. Against the Jets in the finale, he got his heaviest workload, 15 carries for 40 yards.
What was McCoy's average per carry?
Let's have a look. I'm sure it wasn't 5.7. I know that, but he had a lot more carries.
And he broke off some long ones, too.
Yeah, touchdown Mike had the long ones. But hang on, we can look this up. McCoy averaged 5.4 yards per carry.
Comparable.
230. Comparable with 130, 125 more carries. Anyway, those are stats. Go ahead. What was your other point?
The Hogan thing. Last year, the Bills decided $5 million was too much to pay a number three receiver. And New England decided it wasn't. The reason I think he didn't have much more production with New England was, they have Pro Bowls, number one and number two wideouts. This year, if he had been with the Bills at $5 million, he would have been a bargain as their number two. They knew they weren't going to keep their number two. The name escapes me.
Woods?
Just signed off as a $9 million free agent.
Robert Woods.
$9 million, this year, he'd be a bargain.
I don't know that he has the ability to be a number two here or
right.
there.
And I don't know if he's their number two receiver or number three receiver. Like he, like Rob Gronkowski was their number one receiver there. Martellus Bennett was like their number two or number three. You had Julian Edelman still. You still had Amendola, and then Chris Hogan. You know, I mean, what do we tell? He's not a like he's Chris Hogan. You're not going to look at and say this dude is a number two receiver on any team in this league. He's not. He might not even be a number three. You can say he can work the slot, so maybe a number three, but come on. Like, we get caught up in this whole Chris Hogan and the emotion from what he did in the playoffs, and obviously he had the big bomb against us with Stephon Gilmore. I get all of that, but you like if the Bills start to chase in terms of money, you start to try and match what every time the Patriots make an offer sheet, you will find yourself in trouble in the cap room. And then we'll be talking about why do the Bills always get themselves in cap jail? Well, this is why, because you're letting the Patriots dictate what you want to do. Even in putting a higher tender on a player, you don't do that because, oh, the Patriots might decide they want to come in and steal a player away. No, you don't do that.
Last year, again, numbers, Hogan, 38 catches for New England. Edelman, Bennett, and James White, the running back, all had more catches. He wasn't their number two. I don't know if he'd be good enough to be the number – if Bills went into this season with Chris Hogan penciled in as their number two, I'd want to get better there.
Right.
Wouldn't you?
You want a better number two.
Yeah.
Your number two is supposed to be able to handle the load as a number one. You know, so I don't know if anybody out there is going to say Chris Hogan could be a number one receiver on a team. No, he can't.
A lot to talk about here. We will continue to talk about it. And if you're on hold, stay there. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we've got Leonard Johnson in studio with us, the Bills defensive back who's been to a couple of NFL stops, including a three- or four-year stint with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers last year with Sean McDermott in Carolina. Leonard Johnson is one of the veteran free agents the Bills signed a couple of weeks ago. And he joins us next here on the show, the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. Live at One Bills Drive, this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
More of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. The Bills in day two of their voluntary veteran minicamp, and one of those voluntary veterans joins us on the set right now. Leonard Johnson comes over to the Bills after spending last year with the Carolina Panthers. Cornerback Leonard, thanks for coming by. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me, man. I'm excited.
How is this week different than what went on the first couple of weeks when you were here with the rest of the vets?
First couple of weeks, you know, coaches weren't around. We didn't really do anything on the field. Today was a bit different in regards to, you know, having the coaches around, you know, being hands-on. And you guys know, you know, when the coaches are around, you know, it gets pretty competitive. And seen a lot of good things out there today.
What is the carryover for you with Coach McDermott from Carolina? You see a lot of similarities in the workouts last week to this week?
Yeah. So I'm proud of him, man. You know, I expressed that several times, you know, seeing him as a defensive coordinator and then now seeing him in position to run the team, you know, it's crazy, you know, I'm pretty excited.
I'm not finding fault, but you say you're proud of him.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. You must feel like you're almost invested maybe in his success a little bit after a year in Carolina.
I mean, Coach just, you know, I would like to say, you know, him and I have a really good relationship, you know, when I got to Carolina. You know, I was on PUP, and I was coming off an Achilles injury, and he just kept me engaged and kept me in tune with everything that was going on and made me feel important, you know. And for me not to be involved with anything that the team was, you know, doing at that time, I felt a part of, you know, the team and the organization, you know, and he played a big part of that.
Now, we've heard that from a lot of players that have played for him, guys that have been around him, that he – and even the free agents that have signed here now that come from other places, one of the reasons why they sign is because of, you know, he talks to you about family and things off the field, not just on the field. Do you see a lot of that now that he's the head coach and not just the defensive coordinator?
I mean, I haven't seen anything change. You know, I got in, we had a really good conversation, you know, in his office, and I was able to, you know, reflect on last season and some things that went well, you know, as a whole, as a team, and then, you know, as my individual play, you mm-hmm. know, and some expectations and some carryover he wanted me to do. And it was just like, you know, I'm not shocked that he's in the position that he's in, but, you know, I didn't see him as the head coach. You know, I still see him as somebody that, you know, was still, you know, giving me a lot of confidence and keeping mm-hmm. me engaged. So now, you know, he has that tag on his name, you know, which he worked hard for, man. Him sharing his journey, you know, with me and, you know, he worked for, you know, and it's past due. So I'm excited, you know, to be playing with Coach.
Leonard, we're talking about your coaching staff, and you have worked on the field now with Gil Bird, the defensive backs coach. Mm-hmm. What's he like, a guy who played in the league and has coached for a long time?
Coach Bird, man, high energy, you know, a very intelligent guy. And he is always trying to, you know, get you to think, you know, outside the box, you know, and I played with Coach Gil in Tampa. I was in Tampa 4 years, and he really wasn't as hands-on with me as he is now because I had my own coach, which is Nickel Coach, I apologize. Mm-hmm. And just to be underneath his wings and just to soak up the knowledge that he's giving out to the group, you know, is just amazing. And I'm pretty excited, you know, and he's stressing the emphasis on taking the ball away. You know?
Do you like when you play for a guy who played in this league and understands players and what it is to be a player in this league?
Yeah, I love it, man. I love it.
With Leonard Johnson, Bills cornerback, who joins us in studio as the Bills work through their voluntary veteran minicamp. You wound up last year with basically half a season, right, because of an injury in the spring workouts, I guess, right? Is that when you got hurt last year?
I actually ended up having surgery late after the season last year, you know, and I had surgery in March, on the 23rd of March, and I wasn't healthy, and I missed all spring, and you know, the goal was to get ready for training camp. Well, you know, we took more time, and we finished off the last part of the season. So, you know, it was a process.
Leonard, how would you describe the demands put on cornerbacks in Coach McDermott's defense? What's your primary role?
As a corner, I mean, he loves, you know, physical, hardcore guys, you know. So everyone says they're physical. Everyone says they want to tackle, you know, and those are the guys that he's looking for, you know. And he doesn't want you to say it, you know. He wants you to show it, you know, when you're put in position to make a play, you know. So, you know, we'll have a lot of opportunities to tackle, you know.
What's his typical, I guess, with his defense? How does he want his defense to work? Does he want to be able to just get pressure up front and let his guys in the back end make plays back there? Does he want to bring guys from the back end? Like, what is his typical outlook on how he wants his defense?
His outlook is, you know, a combination, you know, but it's a rush pass, you know, defense. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? We will blitz, you know, that's no secret. And we will have to cover on the back end. But, you know, when blitzing, I mean, we have to get home, you mm-hmm. know, and I think that plays a big part in being successful, you know, with taking the ball away and being destructive on, you know, in this defense.
Leonard, you started your career undrafted, but you signed with essentially the hometown team, right?
Oh, yeah.
You grew up in Clearwater, you signed with the Bucs.
Huh? Yep, yep.
What was that like to start your career so close to home like that?
It was a dream come true. I mean, I got, you know, opportunity by, you know, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Greg Schiano to come in and play. Not only did I play, you know, I was pretty productive. And it was like everything was just unfolding right in front of my eyes, you mm-hmm. know. I'm growing up watching Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Rondae Barber fan. I'll never forget, I'm in the huddle with Rondae Barber, you know. Yeah. And it was just like, you know, hey, I used to talk to Rondae every day. Man, do you think I'm going to get cut? He's like, no, man, you got what it takes. You're going to mm-hmm. be in this league for a long time. Believe in yourself, you know, and keep your body healthy. And I still remember those days, man, like it was yesterday. And I still think, you know, that whole organization, I actually had a chance to play in the last game of the season. You know, I walked over to the owners and I thanked them, you know, for allowing me, you know, to play there. And, you know, I was able to do so much, you know, not only from the game, but I have a house, I got two beautiful kids, and, you know, they gave me pretty much all that, you know, so I wanted to thank them.
What's it like? Now, you're listed at, you know, at 5'10". I don't know what you would say you really are, but
6 foot.
They have you listed at 5'10". Now, when you see all of these corners coming into the game, you know, 6'1", 6'2", some of them 6'3", and that it seems like that's where the league is trending to now. That's what the league wants. How difficult is that for you, and what goes through your mind?
Well, I mean, I only can control my, you know, my measurements. And, you know, those guys come in, they're tall, they're long, they can run. I mean, they're fast. But, you know, I have an ability to play inside, you know, as well as outside. And, you know, I try not to let that discourage me at all. Mm-hmm. I just, you know, try and focus on what I can and, you know, just compete, man. You know, you can substitute a lot of things, but you can't substitute that competitive edge.
Yeah. Leonard, in college at Iowa State, you had a pretty successful run as a kick return specialist. Have you done any of that in the NFL?
I haven't done any. I haven't done any at all. I ain't gonna tell you, you know. I ain't a blazer. You know, that was all great blocking. That was all great blocking up front. But
I read about one game he had like 300 yards.
Yeah, 300 yards. You know,
that was a good blocking.
Yeah, that was a real good block.
Really, really good block.
And some schemes, you know.
I also read about a hobby of yours is cooking. You like to cook.
I absolutely love to cook.
What do you cook?
Pretty much anything. I started traveling about 3 years ago. I started traveling all over the world. Going to different countries, learning how to cook different cuisines, you know, learning about different herbs and spices, you know, and I bring them back and I implement the things that I learn into American dishes and some of my favorite dishes.
You ever go to a restaurant and because you can cook, you obviously have a taste for food, and you're like, this is terrible. Like,
I do. I try, and it's funny, cause I try not to critique, you know, the chefs that's cooking, but I know for a fact, anytime I cook, somebody critiquing me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's hard not to, but I'm a simple guy. I kind of go with the same thing. I don't like the experiment. I go to a new restaurant, it's always the same thing.
My wife goes through this thing. We go to dinner, and often, not every time, she'll say, we can make this better at home. Mm-hmm. Do you have that experience as well?
I do. Yeah, my mom is the one that says a lot of time, man, I could have stayed home and just paid you $10 a game. I'm like, nah, Ma, you can't pay me $10. I got to pay for the food. I got to pay.
So while you're up here in the spring doing these workouts, do you go home and cook now after the day?
Yeah, I'm actually in a hotel right now, and that's pretty much how I got started, you know, a couple of years ago. I was in a hotel.
Like George Foreman?
No. That's a hazard.
You can't do that.
But I just bounce around with different teammates and cook at their places and, you know, see what they think. And
what's your best dish?
Best dish to cook? It would just depend on who. I mean, I make a really, really, I mean, I would probably say curry chicken.
Curry chicken. Anybody in your family would you say can cook as good as you, or are you the best in the family?
No, I can't. I'm not even close to the best. I'm just the one, you know, with the most experience, you know. I'm joking.
More than your mom.
More experience in regards to spices and herbs, you know,
and different countries.
So I can, you know, I can take mac and cheese and make it taste like, you know, man, what's that? You know what I mean?
And but, did I read this right? You want eventually to do a cooking show?
I want to have my own show. I want to invite current players, former players onto my show. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about stuff that they're doing in the community. Life after football, you know, and kind of get the fans an intake on them, you know.
I think we can do it here. We can.
I mean, this studio, I'm looking at myself now. I mean,
room back here for.
Yeah.
You can set up a good stove, too.
I like it.
Great,
man.
Appliances. Oh, yeah. All stainless.
I just redid
food,
my
everything.
Whole kitchen, man, so I can cook.
You're serious?
Yeah, I redid my whole kitchen. I put a lot of money, probably overspent, into my kitchen. I just bought a house I'm proud of. And I redid the kitchen so, you know, I can record. I got a bunch of guys that do a bunch of recording for me. I can record everything and do it all in my kitchen, you know. So I got everything, you know, state-of-the-art kitchen.
Oh. That's great. Let's get you in here and do some cooking segments with you.
Let's do it, man. I'm serious.
Thanks, Leonard. Thanks for coming by here.
Yeah, definitely.
Thanks, I appreciate it, man.
Appreciate it. Leonard Johnson, Bills quarterback, joining us as the Bills move through the week of their voluntary minicamp. More coming up in a moment. The John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
go. John Murphy, Donald Jones, coming to you live from One Bills Drive, the show on the air until 3 o'clock today. I like Leonard Johnson. I think we could refit the studio and do a little cooking segment, and if Leonard wants to do it, don't you think? It'd be kind of interesting.
We don't get a chance to get up and get lunch like that that often, so we probably do need
lunch.
Some. Yeah, he can make us lunch.
I think that'd be pretty cool. I hope Leonard sticks around, makes the roster. Sounds like he's got enough experience. You look at some of the video with Leonard Johnson, it strikes me what a thick corner he is. You know what I mean?
He is.
And when he talked about how Sean McDermott wants corners to get up and get involved in the run game and make tackles, I think you can see why with a guy as thick as Leonard Johnson is.
When you look at – first of all, he came over from Carolina. So Sean McDermott obviously knows him. He's familiar with him and how he likes to play. He's a veteran. He's been in the system, so he can help out and teach any of these young guys who – might be the starters in this system, help them transition from being man corners to being in this new system, a zone type of scheme. But he is a guy who does like to come up and help out in the run game. And he is a guy who can hold his own, come out. And he even talked about it. He said, listen, he wants guys that are not just willing to do it, but they like to come up and hit. Mm-hmm. Those are the type of corners that Coach McDermott wants to have on his team. And it seems like he's that type of guy. When you look at, I guess, the reports of some of the guys that have been in-house talking about rookies, most of those guys are those types of guys as well, that like to come up and help out in the run game. So, it seems like that's what he's going to have on his team. He wants corners that will come up here, help out in the run game, not afraid to hit. He wants that out of his safeties as well. We need you to come down, help out in the run game. Because you need that. We all talked about last year with Stephon and how hard it was to watch him miss tackle after tackle after tackle. He doesn't want that out of this team.
So, Leonard Johnson, we thank you for joining us. Our Twitter poll today, what would you do with Mike Gillisley? The Bills' options with the offer sheet extended by the Patriots yesterday. The Bills can match the offer and pick up the tab, $4 million this year, 6.4 over 2 years, or they can walk away, let the Patriots have him, take a fifth-round draft pick. What would you rather do with Mike Gillisley? That's our Twitter poll. We got 300 votes in. 70% of you say take the Patriots' fifth-round pick. 71% say let Gillisley walk away. 29% say the Bills should match the offer. Give us a call. Let us know what you think. 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Here is Butch in Buffalo. Hello, Butch. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, John and Donald. I really wanted to jump into this real fast. I want to, what Donald said earlier about not letting a team dictate what your team does, as far as on your roster, as far as your finances, your draft picks, et cetera. I concur with him, but I also want to say, in Buffalo, by it being a small city in a small market, one newspaper, we have writers that dictate what their opinions is to fans, and sometimes they poison them. I'm gonna get on Gillisley right fast, but I wanted to say it's about Sammy Watkins yesterday. When I saw Vic Carucci say that the Bills should wait on Sammy Watkins, I totally disagree with that. And reason being is Sammy Watkins is ready to play here and be a star in this city. And what you don't want to do is change the mindset of players, saying that they want to play games, and then players just go through the contract and move on. Now, with Mike Gillisley, the Buffalo Bills should not match this deal. It's $4 million. And, Mike's an okay football player, but he wasn't like a great football player, just like Kevin Hogan was a great football player. But I believe that the Buffalo Bills get extra fifth-round pick. We don't have a fourth. Maybe they can move from that 10th slot, move back a little bit and pick up a couple more picks. And I'm going to say, just like I want to bring Chad Kelly here, I want to bring Joe Mixon here. And I believe Joe Mixon can add to that backfield with Jonathan Williams, along with Shady McCoy, and that good offensive line we have, and we're going to keep on ticking. But if the key thing about John and Donald is that this dictating of what we should be doing. It's fun. It's comical. It's good to do that thing. But when you keep hounding, everything is negative in the media, not from you guys, but basically in the newspapers about the Buffalo Bills, and it brainwashes and poisons the fans, and the fans start speaking what they're reading. So I just say the Buffalo Bills should not sign
Okay,
sign,
Butch. All right, thanks. I disagree. I think most fans are – smart enough to make up their own mind. I mean, over the years we've done this show, I realize there's no brainwashing these Bills fans. You know, they reach their own conclusion. They're, in many respects, smarter than me. I won't say you, but me and some of the other media. At least they think about things pretty deeply. So I give them a lot of credit. I don't think they're susceptible to brainwashing by the media.
I mean, not everybody. There probably are some people that will read that stuff and go off of that stuff and disagree with what we say here.
Sure, that's fine.
But, you know, it is what it is. I'm sure it's like that in every city, regardless of, you know, small market, big market, because the bigger the market, the worse the media is, you know. Unless that team is winning all the time,
right.
The bigger the market, the worse the media is. You have so many different media outlets that are probably all saying some of the same things, and it can really have whatever effect on whatever fan. It just depends on the person that's reading it and how much they really read into it. I mean, you read into that stuff, you can read into what we say. Ultimately, you got to have your own opinion.
Yeah. Hey, we're going to break for the top of the hour. When we come back, we're going to focus on the draft. You're welcome to join us, too. Our guest is Dan Shanka. He is one of the editors and publishers of Our Lad's Guide to the NFL Draft. The 2017 Our Lad's Scouting Services Draft Guide is out there. They have a year-long series of draft updates that they put out, prospect updates. We'll talk with Dan Shanka about that. You're welcome to join us if you have a question or a comment, 803-0550, or toll-free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. Back with more in a moment. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, live at One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Sports. Update
from One Bills Drive, where the offseason conditioning work continues. Day two of the Bills' voluntary veteran minicamp going on inside the AdPro Sports Training Center. Meantime, the Bills have a couple of days left to decide whether to match the offer sheet presented to running back Mike Gillisley by the New England Patriots yesterday. The offer reportedly 2 years worth $6.4 million, including $4 million in the first year. Buffalo has until Monday to decide whether to match the offer. The Bills put an original fifth-round tender on Gillisley worth $1.797 million. Meaning if the Bills don't match, they get a fifth-round draft pick in return. Aaron Hernandez, former Patriots tight end, who was serving a life sentence for a murder conviction and just days ago was acquitted of another double murder, died overnight, hanging himself in his prison cell. Massachusetts prison officials say he was 27 years old. The former Patriots tight end was pronounced dead at a nearby hospital. He was in a single cell in a general population housing unit in the maximum security prison. More Patriots news. Cornerback Malcolm Butler has signed his restricted free agent tender, which opens the possibility New England might trade him because a player cannot be traded unless he's under contract. Butler's status was in limbo until he signed the first-round tender, $3.9 million. President Donald Trump being joined by some of his friends from the New England Patriots today. The Super Bowl visit, Super Bowl winners visiting the White House. Tom Brady did not go, citing personal family matters. At least five other Patriots have said they're not going to attend today's ceremony for political reasons. More Patriots news. Running back James White has agreed to terms on a 3-year contract extension with New England. NFL schedule scheduled to come out tomorrow night, 8 p.m. You can follow along on our website, buffalobills.com. And late yesterday, the Raiders cut defensive tackle Dan Williams, who started 26 games over the last two seasons. Bison's in action tonight, 6:05 at Coca-Cola Field. They host Norfolk tonight. Bison's scheduled to start right-hander Jared Grubbe on the mound. He is 1-0. Norfolk will start left-hander Chris Lee. The Bisons held on for a 4-3 win over the Norfolk Tides yesterday. They're now 8-3 on the season. It is the John Murphy Show, presented by NEPA Auto Parts. We're coming to you live from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Donald Jones, and time to talk about the draft now, just 8 days away. Joining us right now on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, the man who is an NFL scouting general manager for Our Lad Scouting Services, former NFL scout with the Eagles, the Redskins, and the Chiefs, and an NFL team personnel consultant. Happy to have Dan Shanka on the line with us. Dan, it's John Murphy and Donald Jones, and we thank you very much for joining us on the show today.
Yeah, thank you, John. It's always great being with you. I follow you up there in everything, and you do a great job, and it's a pleasure for me to be on the show. And I saw Donald when he played in college, so, you know, you got a good one with you, John. So, but anyway, hey, it's big now in Buffalo, getting ready with the new coach and everything.
Hey, Donald's ears just perked up, and We're both wondering now what Our Lads had to say about the young receiver out of Youngstown State back in 2000.
I really wasn't wondering. John is wondering.
He's very sensitive about these scouting reports. Years later, 9 years later, Donald still holds a grudge over some of the reports about him coming out in the draft. Believe it or not.
Well, Well, I tell you what. See, we follow Missouri Valley quite closely and everything. And, you know, no, we Youngstown's always had great tradition and everything. And, you know, we always follow them. Of course, this year, he's going to be excited with, you know, two or three guys possibly getting drafted. Or so two going to get drafted for sure. And, you know, maybe one going or two going as free agents. So, yeah, Youngstown, the Penguins are rolling again, even without Donald. But, no, we like Donald. We anybody that can catch the ball, we like.
Hey, tell us about the most prominent Youngstown guy. Let's start with him, Derek Rivers. Donald has met him and seen him play, but what does our Lance have to say about the outside linebacker, Derek Rivers?
Yeah, in fact, you hit it right on the head. See, you got him right as an outside linebacker. I know some people think he's defensive end, but he's too undersized for that. But, no, really an explosive guy. Saw him a lot. Like I said, in those Missouri Valley guys, we really study, like Carson Wentz last year. I mean, everybody's talking about this up-and-coming guy. And we saw Carson for a couple of years, you know, and my son played at South Dakota State. So that's why I'm so familiar with, you know, all the guys and stuff in that league. So, but anyway, no, Rivers, explosive guy, and he's going to be a good 3-4 outside linebacker. He's shown that he can drop. You know, I expect him to go in the third round, maybe late, you know, or, you know, somewhere in that third round area, rangy guy. The only thing that, you know, he's got to do in my mind is keep that motor going 100% all the time, because he kind of, you know, gets weaker teams and, you know, or weaker competition, I should think. Guys trying to block him, he didn't always beat him into submission like he probably should have or could have, but athletically on the field and everything, this guy is a force to be reckoned with, and I think should be a good pro player.
Dan, we were talking about this before we had you on air. Where are you based out of?
Cedar Rapids, Iowa.
Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Okay, so that's why you're covering the Missouri Valley like that. Who else is coming out of the Missouri Valley this year?
Hey, I'll tell you what. Now, a guy that I really like and he was the Buck Buchanan Award winner, is a shoot from Northern Iowa. And one thing about having Northern Iowa about 50 miles away from here, we get to see a lot of players all over the league. And then even Cup came in from Eastern Washington 2 years ago, and I got to see him live and really liked him too. But Carter Shute from Northern Iowa, super smart guy. He, you know, he's actually more productive, you know, than Rivers. But he doesn't have those long arms that everybody likes. He's just a blue collar, hardworking. You know, give it to you every single down. That kind of guy that he's probably going to end up being a free agent. I don't know if he'll be drafted, but. You know, he's just a really good football player. He's one of the finalists in the William Campbell Academic Award, you know, this year and everything. And he's just really a good football player. And he played in the East-West game. And Rivers had signed up for the East-West, and then they ran a guy short at Senior Bowl, so he hustled over to the Senior Bowl. But again, the league is really – you know, when they play teams, say the mid majors or even bigger, you know, they show up quite well and they win a lot of those games.
On the line with Dan Shanke, he is NFL scouting general manager for Our Lads Scouting Services. They publish a draft guide. They publish all year long. A tremendous website. Hey Dan, I know you do a mock draft. In fact, I have it right in front of me in your 2017 guide. The essence of what you do is not the mock draft, but I found it interesting that when many people are looking at three, maybe four quarterbacks in the first round, you've got one, just one, in the first round of your mock draft, Mitch Trubisky, all the way down at 25 to Houston. Can you talk about Trubisky and why only just one quarterback in the first round?
Yeah, because that's realistically, John, what it should be. Now, as you know, everybody goes berserko, and they're going to, you know, go for quarterbacks, but you know what? Sometimes no action is better, you know, than bad action, you know, and the other thing is, and this is what the NFL and they're just guilty of it, different teams that, you know, their emotion because of the fan base and what have you, that can't take over, you know, over reason, you know what I mean? You've got to keep a head. These guys aren't these quarterbacks are all second round guys, really. I mean, they're none of them should go in the first round, but Trubisky is the most accurate, makes the best decisions. You know, that's why we got him in there. But I mean, hey, you can go out and, you know, I've been to so many workouts where, you know, guys say, well, this guy here, man, he can really throw that ball mile, and on his knees, he can just throw that, you know, ball 70. Hey, you know what? Last time I checked, in the NFL, if you're on your knees throwing, you're in deep trouble, you know. And so you better be able to step up into the pocket, read coverages, and be accurate. You have to, number one thing, you have got to have accuracy, and you must make great decisions. If you don't have at least those two factors, and obviously there's a ton of other factors that you have to have when you're looking for a potential pro quarterback, but if you're not accurate, you know, and you don't make good decisions, you don't have a chance, and I don't care who you are. And that's one thing that Trubisky did a nice job of. He's very accurate. I mean, he's got good ball placement. He can hit the receivers in stride. You know, he steps up into the pocket nice. I mean, he's only played 1 year, though. You know, and that's what bothers us the most. You've got a small book on him. But he's a very smart guy. And, I mean, we love Watson. We just wish he was more accurate. But he is so inaccurate, it just, you know, it's scary. He just, the more film you look at on him, you know, even the swing and passes and the checkdowns, he'll throw high, low, behind, and his receivers make great catches. And so, you know, that's a real problem. And then Mahomes, everybody talks about that great arm he's got. And all that. Well, I want to tell you something. That great arm throws a lot of interceptions too. You know, if you don't know where you're throwing it. So he's got a long way to go. And I hear all that scuttlebutt too, that, you know, four may go in the first round, and, you know, three for sure, and all that. But if it is, it's going to be major disaster for whoever takes them.
Dan, it obviously, you know, you sound like how we feel up here. I mean, there probably should only be one or two guys that end up in the first round, and that should be later in the first round where teams already have those starting quarterbacks, where this guy can come in and sit behind for a couple of years and really learn how to play quarterback in this league. But like you said, you know that teams go berserk and they end up drafting these guys very early. They end up reaching for these guys. We know how that can set your franchise back a few years. What point do we get, or when do we get to a point where teams are like, listen, these guys are all second-round guys. It's so deep at so many other positions. Maybe we should just go ahead and take, you know, take everybody else and take one of these guys in the second round. Do we ever get to that point?
Well, you know, I don't know. I don't think so, because if you don't have a quarterback, the teams got to have one sooner or later. But, like, let's say, for instance, we're Cleveland. I'm Cleveland. I wouldn't take a quarterback in the first round. Hey, if I can get two Pro Bowl players, say I can get Myles Garrett at one, and, you know, I got him locked up, and then I'm looking down at 12, and then I'm going to go ahead and take a Pro Bowl tight end if he's there. Now, O.J. Howard might not be there, but now you get two Pro Bowl players, and I got to believe, you know, I mean, there's always going to be some faction saying, well, where's our quarterback? Well, you know, I'll tell you what, he's in the junk pile with the other 22 you've had, you know. So you wait till the second round, and if one of those guys is there, go ahead, pull the trigger, you know, at 33. We put Deshaun Watson in there, but, you know, maybe Trubisky. I doubt if he'll be there because everybody sees what we see and his accuracy and everything. But and then if you really want to, they got the firepower, move up in the bottom of the first round and maybe take a Trubisky if he's still there. But, hey, get your Pro Bowl players. You need more than a quarterback to get things rolling. And then next year, hey, you're not going to turn it around in 1 year anyway, so – you may be in the running next year for a really good quarterback like Darnold from Southern Cal. So build up your team and then, you know, go with Kessler right now this year. And then next year, hey, you may have your guy. So, but anyway, you know, I just think that you got to get the best player at your pick, the best player on your board at your pick, and don't go reaching for a quarterback or, you know, another position. Just get your best football player.
On the line with Dan Shockey, he is NFL Scouting General Manager for Our Lads Scouting Services. He joins us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Hey, Dan, from a Buffalo Bills perspective, let's say they don't do a quarterback first, second round, but when you get down to third round, they don't have a fourth right now. Fifth round, who would be viable quarterbacks who might be available down there a little bit deeper in the draft that might be an interesting prospect if the Bills want to go that way?
Well, you know, I tell you, there's some quarterbacks that I think that, and again, a guy like Nathan Peterman, I like, we've got him in the third round. And I think that, you know, that's where he's graded and he should probably go in that area. But, you know, he's a kid that's a really smart, tough. He's kind of like a Kirk Cousins kind of quarterback, you know, not real sexy, but a guy that's just real stable, does things the right way and gets things done. You know, Davis Webb is another possibility, big, strong kid from Cal, who he's going to take a couple years, you know, to get things going, but he's in that area. But a guy that's really interesting to me, and nobody's talking about him, and he's a little bigger than people think he is the Trevor Knight from Texas A&M. He's a very athletic guy. He's got a strong arm. He's a smart guy. And he's an excellent developmental quarterback. So there's some guys there. And I mean, I really like C.J. Beathard from Iowa, or we did. He didn't have a great year this year. I've seen him play a lot. But to me, he's more of a just strictly a backup guy that I don't think he'd ever really be a starter.
In Buffalo, there's always a lot of interest in Chad Kelly, Buffalo native from Ole Miss, who's got the injury issues, got the off-field issues. You have him ranked as your 11th quarterback on the board. And do you see him as a draftable prospect or maybe more of a free agent?
I tell you, right now, I think more of a free agent, you know, because when that wrist went, you know, during workouts and he's had a bad wrist and that, I think that, but, hey, you never know. I mean, like I said, Buffalo might be the best spot for him, you know, to be a developmental guy, maybe to, you know, settle down and just kind of let things stabilize and, you know, Jim being there close by and, you know, maybe helping, you know, keep him in line. I don't know. He's just so up and down, you know. You just don't really know what's going to happen there. But he's got talent, no question about it. He can run. He can throw that ball. And, it's too bad he's had those things in his background because he was our second-rated senior quarterback coming into this season. And, after he got injured and things, it just kind of went south for him.
Dan, let's bring you back up to the first and second round. What should the Bills do with that 10th overall pick and then jumping into the second round?
Well, you know, we've got Mike Williams in there at 10, but I've had mixed feelings about that. The reason I've got one guy, one of our scouts, that he just strictly does receivers, and he had a battle with himself and about all year about, you know, Mike Williams and Corey Davis, as did I, you know. And I think if Buffalo wanted to go with the receiver, to be honest about it, I'd probably go with Corey Davis. And I'll tell you why, because he's used to that cold weather. You know, he's up at Western Michigan, and no matter what anybody says, they say, oh, yeah, we get used to it and all that. And no, they don't. They get colder than most that used to that cold weather. And, you know, Corey Davis, he's an Illinois guy. He went over and played at, you know, Western Michigan. He's used to the cold weather. And so I'd probably lean toward Davis at 10 if the Bills wanted to go with the receiver over Williams, even though we got Williams graded a little higher. I just think that, you know, that blood doesn't thicken up enough for him to probably play in Buffalo.
Hey, Dan, you've got a list of needs for each team in the NFL. You rank them. You have defensive back as Buffalo's number one needs in the Our Lads draft guide. Can you talk about some of the top defensive backs that might be available to the Bills in the early rounds, first, second rounds maybe?
Yeah, I tell you. Now, a big corner safety kind of guy, Quincy Wilson from Florida. He's probably – teams are looking at him different, John, in regards to he's a big corner – but which means also he could play safety back there because he's a good size, 6'1", you know, 210, 12, 19 pounds, whatever he is this week. But, you know, he's a good size guy that people, you know, like. And now, obviously, with the corner situation, I think that there's a variety. This year, you're going to get corners all the way through, you know, that can probably start for you through the sixth round or so. Now,
wow.
even late at 195, we gave Buffalo Cutter from Middle Tennessee, who is a really good cover guy, but he's slender. He's a very thin guy, but he's a real good cover football player, and he's a tough kid. He's a wiry built kid, but you know, and he's very well thought of, and he was going to play in the East-West and got a foot injury before the game. So there's guys all the way through there, you know, corners in this draft that can help Buffalo out with, you know, losing a couple corners like they did. You know, there's guys available all the way through there.
Hey, Dan, I was telling Donald, I actually showed him the draft guide, which we've talked about this. It's devoid of any
pictures,
colorful, splashy pictures. To me, that it's kind of nuts and bolts. When you talk a couple of times during our conversation today about we have them rated here and our scouts, tell us about the Our Lad system, the group that you put together and how you guys work.
Well, the scouts that we have are all former NFL scouts that have recently retired or were between jobs and things like that that we put on board. In fact, a lot of people didn't know that, like last year, a guy that has three Super Bowl rings that are mock draft, you know what I mean? So
yeah.
He's back in the league scouting now. So, but, no, we've got, you know, we'll, and then guys that we'll cross-check each other. Now, I see everybody. Okay, I look at everybody in the country starting in May. I'll look at guys and start eliminating them and things like that. Then I'll go back and briefly look at if they had some good characteristics that I saw early. But, you know, if they didn't really excite me, then I'll go on, you know, to the next guys and things. But you know, you look at a minimum of – each of us look at a minimum of 4 to 5 games. In fact, Michigan this year, I looked at I want to say over the last 2 years, I looked at 14 or 16 Michigan tapes. So, you know, I feel like I know those Michigan guys pretty good and how they line up and where they go. And but then we cross-check each other. We'll have 2 or 3 guys do defensive backs and then receivers and running backs and quarterbacks. But like I said, I see everybody. Then I can kind of tie everything in and stack them, you know, after visiting with my scouts and things like that, and how they, because when you got so many guys with different experiences, it really helps you and gets you a different perspective. And then I might be way off on a guy, and then somebody says, well, hey, Dan, this is what I saw here, here, and here. And then we try to look at them different times of the year, early, late, and middle. And then, you know, we looked at their junior year in the summertime. And then, John, we really get jammed, though, when, you know, 108 guys end up coming out in the middle of January.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, we got to really crank it up then because half of them we knew were probably going to come out.
Right.
And the other half we didn't know. So then we really got to get going. Then we see the All-Star games and things like that. And then the combine, of course, we get the verified information because, hey, as we know, you know, if you don't have verified information on the guy, it really doesn't mean a whole lot. Because I've fallen in love with some very good players at times, and then they get the verified information. The guy couldn't run, or he couldn't do this, he couldn't do that. He's a little skinny guy or something, you know. And I go, oh, geez, you know, and I really love the guy as a player.
Yeah.
So, but anyway.
Yeah, and then you put it all together in the form of the draft guide, which arrived in my mailbox last week, and then monthly newsletters. And you also have the website, ourlads.com. And I got to tell you this, Dan, there's that period in the off season, you know, the season ends anywhere from February till maybe the start of free agency, when you really need that website with your updated depth charts because you're not quite sure, did I miss something over the weekend? Did so-and-so move from this team to that team? That stuff really comes in handy, the updated depth charts that you guys do, I believe, on a daily basis, right?
Right, absolutely. Whenever we get the – and it comes daily, but we get the official transactions from the league, and then we update it on the depth charts. And also we have the college depth charts now, too, where – fans could, you know, go to their favorite team or what they want to find out about a guy. They can just go and click on that link, and they can read the guy's bio somewhere. And then a lot of them, and it will, after they get drafted, we'll have, you know, stuff in our guide will be on the pro depth charts. Like
right.
You go to Buffalo right now, you know, click on those, and Sammy Watkins and read our report about what we said, you know, when he came out in 2014. So, But anyway, there's a lot of information there on college and the pro information for the fans.
All right, that's at ourlads.com, right? And that's where you can order the magazine, right?
Yeah.
Yes, the fans. In fact, right before you phoned this morning, it was we had three real quick orders, guys wanting a priority getting it out. So they, you know, we're taking orders now and getting it out to everybody. So they can go to ourlads.com and order online or give us a phone call at 1-800-PRO-DRAFT.
Dan, last thing before we let you go, who is your most exciting player, the guy that you like studying the most coming out this year?
Well, I've had a man crush on Jonathan Allen, you know, for really 2 years. I really like the guy. He works hard. And then this year, Alabama, you know, didn't have the depth they've had the last couple of years. And he just is a really smart guy. He's an excellent competitor. He plays hard every down. You know, he just he sells out and gets after. You know, he doesn't always have to make the tackle. But, you know, here's a guy that's basically an interior guy. He did play on the edge at times. But, you know, he was second all-time at Alabama in sacks behind Derek Thomas, the great Hall of Famer Derek Thomas. So that kind of tells you what kind of player he is and everything. And, plus, he's a really smart guy, disciplined football player. I think, you know, he's going to be an annual Pro Bowl-type player. So really like him. And a guy I always liked for the Bills was Kyle Williams, how hard he always worked all the time. I know he's had a tough time with injuries, but I always liked Kyle from the time he came out of LSU. You know, I mean, the guy just plays hard, super hard, and that's what Jonathan Allen does, except he's just a little bigger than Kyle.
Hey, Dan, thanks for this. Good luck in the draft next week, and thank you very much for joining us today.
You bet, you guys. Thanks a million.
Dan Shaka, he is NFL Scouting General Manager for Our Lads Scouting Services. They've got their draft guide is out. The 2017 draft guide is out. They have the monthly newsletters. They have a great website with updated depth charts. You can see it all at ourlads.com. Our thanks to Dan Shaka for joining us on the Subway Fresh Tank Hotline. Subway, eat fresh. When we return, what if the Bills take the quarterback in the first round? Then what? Or what if the Bills go wide receiver, Mike Williams or somebody in the first round, then what? We'll discuss some of these scenarios, Donald and I, when we return. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. Our thanks again to Dan Shaka of Our Lads Scouting Services. Our Lads Draft Guide is available at ourlads.com. Thanks very much to Dan for joining us. John Murphy, Donald Jones here until 3, coming up at 2 o'clock. There's a lot going on in New England. Tom Curran of Tomcast Sportsnet in New England is going to join us, right? I mean, Hernandez, you've got Gillislee's deal. You've got James White's deal. You've got Malcolm Butler.
Tom Brady.
And, oh, by the way, they're at the White House today.
Yeah, they're at the White House. Well, you know, a couple of guys are absent, so that's a big deal as well.
Yeah, we'll talk with Tom Curran about all that. Our Twitter poll today deals with Gillislee. You know the news that came out yesterday. What would you like to do? What would you like to see the Bills do with Mike Gillislee? 350 votes in so far on Twitter. 70% of you say, you know what, let him go. Take the Patriots draft pick, the fifth-round pick, let him go. 71% say that. 29% say, nope, match the Bills' offer. Match what they want. They're going to pay him $4 million this year, $6.4 million over 2 years. Your thoughts on that? Let's hear him on Twitter. Let's hear him on the phone at 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. 8 days away from the NFL draft. It starts a week from tomorrow. Round one on Thursday, rounds two and three on Friday, the rest of the draft on Saturday. And look, we all tend to look at the draft as first round. Who are the Bills going to take? 10 overall. Right. And that's big. That'll be the headline. But right now they have five picks after that, and the rest of the league has to pick after that. And we want to get into a discussion, Donald and I, right here about – scenarios. So what if this happens, then what? What if, then what? What if they choose this guy, then what do you do after that? Because the draft, really, if you're going to view it analytically, should be viewed as a whole, not just the first-round pick. So what if, then what? Donald and I are going to play that game the next few minutes here. What if, Donald, the Bills draft a wide receiver in the first round, Mike Williams or Corey Davis or maybe John Ross? So let's put that aside. They go wide receiver in the first round. Then what? What do they do next? What do you say? I got a few thoughts on this.
If they go wide receiver in the first round, I think you then go with a DB in the second round, one of those corners in the second round. There's going to be a lot of talent still out there in the second round. I mean, Dan just said it's going to be talent all the way through the sixth round.
Crazy, huh?
That's crazy, you know. So I think you then go with the DB in the second round. But we all know it depends on who's on the board at that time, you know, because if you, you know, what if one of these quarterbacks don't get drafted in the first round? Then what, you know? So if there's still a quarterback sitting there in the second round, maybe then do you take him? I don't know.
No. What if, then what? If they draft a wide receiver in the first round, and I'd be okay with that. Mike Williams, Corey Davis. Wouldn't be as cool with John Ross in the first round.
No.
But I agree with you. You got to go defense second round and maybe the next two picks. And, yeah, I'd take a corner ahead of a safety and even a linebacker there instead of a safety. But if they go first-round wide receiver, please tell me they'll come back with a cornerback in the second round. Now, who's going to be there? You love Marlon Humphrey. Maybe he'll be there in the second round. You wouldn't expect Marshon Lattimore would be there in the second round. Shanka just mentioned Quincy Wilson, maybe a third-round prospect out of Florida. But as he said, maybe, you know, six rounds deep in terms of the cornerback pool. So I think second round, maybe even third round, you start to look at corners.
You know, the crazy thing to me is, like, every time we bring up the top corners in the draft, it's like there's a new name in the top five.
It is. I've noticed that. Yep.
And it's like I'm looking right now, and there's a kid. If we can bring it back up on the MSG side, there's a kid, Chidobe Awuzie, out of Colorado. It's like you haven't really heard that much about him.
Mostly because his name is so difficult to pronounce.
You haven't heard that much about him, but now you're talking about him being the top four corners in the draft. You know, so. It's, I guess, you know, obviously it all depends on what teams fall in love with what player. But, man, this draft really must be that deep if you keep on seeing a new name in the top five corners, like, every week.
Our lads has him, Chidobe Awuzie, as the sixth-rated corner in the draft from Colorado. Started all 4 years, 42 starts at Colorado. So, that's guy would get your attention.
Yeah, it would definitely get your attention. He's a guy who's played a lot. He's played a lot in his college career, so – You know, how tall? 6 foot?
6 foot tall, just a shade under 6 foot tall and 202 pounds.
202 pounds. So he has some decent size to him. You know, if you go the wide receiver in the first round, I think you have to come back and go defense. I think you have to go defense. And you have to go with either a corner or you have to go with the linebacker position.
What if, then what? What if the Bills draft a wide receiver? Now, what if the Bills do draft a cornerback in the first round? Maybe Humphrey, maybe Lattimore at 10. That would be good. What if they draft a cornerback in the first round? I hope they do. Then what do they come back and do in the second round? I'm saying come back on defense. Come back with another defensive player, a linebacker, I would think, at that point. And I'm open to other things, maybe a second-round wide receiver. Maybe, no, I'm not going to say running back, especially. I think you come back in defense in the second round and probably a linebacker or safety in the second round if they draft a cornerback in the first round. What if, then what? Donald, what if the Bills draft a cornerback in the first round, then what for you?
I think if you draft a cornerback in the first round, then I think you come back and go wide receiver in the second round. One of those wide receivers that we talked about, I guess, in that second wave of wide receivers. We've heard a lot more of those guys being more of possession type of receivers, guys who can get down the field, but guys who really understand the art of route running and how to play receiver, guys who might even be able to translate or transition into the NFL game a little bit faster than those guys all the way at the top. So, you know, I think you come back and you go with the wide receiver in the second round.
Wide receiver.
Mm-hmm.
And is there somebody is there going to be value there, do you think?
I think you go with a guy like Zay Jones. I like Zay Jones. Or even a guy, Chris Godwin from Penn State.
Okay, they're both likely to be there, right?
Yeah, they're both likely to
Top
be there.
10, what, second round?
44 we have?
Yeah, 44, yep. All right, what if, then what? What if the Bills draft a cornerback? Now, what if they draft a linebacker in the first round? Reddick from Temple or Reuben Foster from Alabama? I'd be okay with Foster, certainly, if they draft him in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
What if, then what do they do in the second round? If it's me, I go to cornerback in the second round. What do you think?
I think if you go with the linebacker in the first round, first of all, I think Reuben Foster would still be there at the 10th pick just because of his whatever his off-the-field issues really are. I think he'll still be there at the 10th pick, so I'd be more comfortable with him than Hassan Reddick. I think Hassan Reddick is a good player. Obviously, you're always going to question level of talent that he's played against coming out of Temple. Plus, he's a guy who is now transitioning into being a linebacker after having his hand in the dirt most of his college career. So I don't know if you want to bring that guy in and say he's going to be our starting outside linebacker right away. He's a guy who, because of his athletic ability, has really started to rise up draft boards, and what he did in the Senior Bowl and what he did at the Combine, now he's rising. Reuben Foster, for me, is more of a natural linebacker, knows what he's doing, a guy that goes sideline to sideline and will hit and run through anybody who he hits. And I like that kid at the 10th pick. So if you go with, you know, a linebacker at the 10th pick, I think you come back and then go with the cornerback in the second round.
What if the Bills draft a quarterback in the first round, 10th overall? Mm-hmm. What if, then what? If they draft a quarterback in the first round, Donald, I'm ripping off my microphone and storming out of the studio. I don't want it. I'm sorry. I don't like any of these quarterbacks that much to use a 10th overall pick on them. So they draft a quarterback in the first round. I'm out.
You're out?
Well, at least for a little while.
We'll definitely be on set, so I'm out of here.
Take a little break and cool off if that happens.
You know what? We're going to break right now.
Right? I would.
Oh, man. If they go with the quarterback in the first round, I think, man, everything is still on the board then at that point. I think you got to go with – you still need everything. You need a corner. You need a wide receiver. I think you can go with a corner in the second round. It would be, for me, a tough choice if they went with the quarterback in the first round. Especially these guys that, like, are not even – most people are saying these guys are not first-round picks. You take a quarterback in the first round, I might get up and walk out with you.
Dead air.
Yeah, just, you know what? Murph, can you go to break real fast? I need to, like, go get a beer or something like that.
You know, it's funny. When you hear Shanka, who, you know, doesn't have all the answers, he had some, and obviously he studied this draft. But when you hear him talk about the quarterback class, how, you know, they think there's only one quarterback even worth mentioning as a possible first-round prospect, and he didn't sound sold on Trubisky. Mm-hmm. And yet we know, right? We know there's going to be one more than one quarterback chosen in that first round, right? Don't we? Don't you think?
It happens every year. I mean, the only year that you can think about in recent history is the year E.J. Manuel came out. You know, he was the only guy that went in the first round. There are so many teams that need quarterbacks. I mean, you have probably 10 to 12 teams that would say we have our franchise quarterback for the next, you know, 5 to 10 years. Everybody else is searching for that guy. You know, so teams are going to reach for these quarterbacks. And it's sad because of how it really does set your franchise back when you don't find the right guy, but you're so desperate to find that quarterback that you end up reaching. And you see franchises go, you know, years, 17 years without making it to the playoffs because you still haven't been able to find that quarterback, you know. So it would be, I mean, like you said, there are going to be three, maybe four guys that go in the first round, even though everybody's saying none of these guys should go in the first round.
It's just, I don't know if it bothers me, but I find it interesting. Look, Dan Shanka is not smarter than, you know, most general managers in the NFL, right? He's done the work, maybe not even as much as some of these general managers have done, and yet he knows, and he says there only should be one, if that, in the first round, and yet other general managers are going to feel pressure and pull the trigger. It's part of what I think makes the draft kind of interesting.
It is.
How teams respond to pressure from owners and fans and coaching staffs. Hey, we need this guy. Go get this guy.
We need this guy, yeah. I wouldn't want to be a GM in the draft room. I understand you get paid the big bucks to do that stuff and scout and make those picks. But when you're a team that doesn't have a quarterback and now everybody's pressuring you, all you hear is that we need a quarterback. We need this. We need this. And you're pressured to make that pick. You're also pressured to win, you know.
Yeah, so the clock's ticking.
Right, the clock is ticking. Exactly, you know. So if you have so much pressure on you to pick a quarterback, you might not necessarily like, and then you have maybe the coach is saying we need this guy, and then you go ahead and take that guy because you're being pressured by so many different directions, and then he's not good and the team is not winning, then you get fired. It's a tough position to be in.
Take a couple of phone calls here. Tony calling from Gettysville. Hello, Tony. Welcome to the show. You're on the air.
Hey, John and Donald, how you doing today?
Good.
I'm a subscriber of Our Lad's Guide for the last 10 years, and I can say it's a great magazine. Also, it's great for undrafted free agents to sign a nice write-up on, you know, when the Bills or another team signs a player.
Yeah.
Guide. But my question really is, Mike Gillisby, if we lose him, we get a fifth-round pick, but New England doesn't own their own fifth-round pick. Cleveland has their pick. So they have Denver's fifth-round pick, and they also have a supplemental pick from the NFL. which pick would we get?
The word is we get 163, which is the one from Denver. The Bills would get 163 in the fifth round, which Great. Falls right in between. Now, the Bills, if they don't match the offer and let Gillislee go, they'll have three fifth-round picks, 156. They would have 163 and 171. So almost three in a row, you know, a couple of picks apart.
Great.
You can get players in the fifth round. Kyle Williams, yeah. fifth-round pick.
And we should ask Dan, you know, what running backs you can get in the fifth round
yeah.
this year. We definitely forgot to ask him that question because that would probably be the round. I mean, you could end up taking one in the fourth, in the third, but I would think they would end up taking one in the fifth round.
Maybe.
To replace
Grizzly. Maybe. Here's Mike in Jersey. Hello, Jersey Mike. You're on the air with us.
Hey, guys. How are you today?
Great.
Good.
Hey, I don't think we should match offer for Mike Gillislee because I think we have a chance to get our own Brady in the fifth round in the form of Kelly. So I think we as fans, we won't regret it even if he doesn't work out because now we have extra fifth pick and we used it on him. Because I think I still think that he has a chance to get drafted. And I don't think he's going to be go undrafted as everyone is expecting. So I think it's a good move to just let him go. And one other thing I want to say is I think Bill Belichick now sees us as a little bit more of a competition. That's how I see it because in past 17 years, I haven't seen him really taking on our players that much. But lately he is trying to, trying to weaken our organization by picking up, Gilmore and now Gillislee. I think it's a good thing for us because we are going in the right direction with the new coach we have. I don't think we're going to be bullied anymore. That's all I wanted to say.
Okay, Jersey Mike, thanks very much.
Yeah, I mean, I hope we're not. Have we been bullied?
I don't feel bullied.
You bully me? I think you bully me. You know, we had some fans that thought you bullied me a couple weeks ago.
Really?
Yeah, you remember we were going back and forth on something. I don't know what.
Are you okay? Are you?
I'm fine.
Emotionally scarred?
I think I might have to call a hotline or something like that.
Is this bullying right here?
Yeah, this is bullying. You know, there's a lot of anti-bullying things going on in this country.
It gets better.
No, listen, the Patriots obviously have been at the top of the NFL for over a decade now. They've been at the top of the AFC East for a long time. I guess you can say they're bullying the AFC East. But you still don't ever want to get into a situation where you're letting another team dictate what you're doing on your roster, with your roster, and what you're doing with your finances. If you get into that situation, then you are being bullied. And I don't think the Bills want to get into that. I don't think Doug Whaley wants to get into that. And I don't think that Sean McDermott wants to get into that. If something like this comes where, the Patriots go ahead and offer Mike Gillislee $4 million in the first year, you have to let that guy go.
Yeah.
You know, you really have to let that guy go and bring somebody else in.
I think so, but you may feel differently. Give us a call. The lines are open at 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. We're back with more in a moment. John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy and Donald Jones talking football, NFL football on the show until 3 o'clock today. We're going to talk about the Patriots in the next hour. Tom Curran from Comcast Sports New England. Boy, there's a lot going on there, including Mike Gillislee. We're taking phone calls. What do you think the Bills should do with Mike Gillislee? Let's work through a couple of calls here. Jerry calling from Clarence. Hello, Jerry. Welcome.
John, hello. How are you today?
I am great. Thank you, Jerry.
Great. Listen, my comment would be that I believe New England can put the value that they have on Mike Gillislee because they're looking at him completely in a different light than what the Bills see him. The Bills see him as a solid number two between a running back behind that they're paying and justifiably so $7 to $9 million a year.
Right.
New England refused to sign Garrett Blunt. They now have Gillislee, and they consider him to be what I believe part of what will be a running back by committee and who is going to get a bigger share of the workload than he might have gotten here in Buffalo and therefore can be justified as far as the money is concerned.
Yeah, they can justify it, sure. And that's absolutely, you're right about that, Jerry, and that's what, keeps it interesting. I mean, there's some talent at running back in New England. Deion Lewis, I think, is a pretty talented player. James White, they just extended his contract. They signed Rex Burkhead. as an unrestricted free agent this year. They have others, too. I think Gillislee, if he stays there, would be the sixth running back on that roster. Will he stick
Which
on the roster? You would think so.
You would think so.
Is he a regular starter? I don't know if he's going to be the number one back there.
They don't really have a number one back, I don't think. You know, I don't think they ever really have a number one back. You see some games where it's the same in their passing game. You'll see some games where Gronk will go off, the next game Edelman, the next game Hogan. It really just depends on who they feel like featuring that week, depending on what defense they're playing, you know. And that's, I guess, the beauty of their system and them having so many weapons. They can do that. Like, Mike Gillislee might be a healthy scratch one week, and then the next week he'll go off for 150 yards. You know, it just depends on that week. They really switch up their offense quite often. Really every week they switch up what it is that they're doing. They switch up who it is that they're featuring, and that's just how they work. You know, you might see Gillislee in. You might see him out, like, undressed on the sideline. Yep. I can tell you this. He'll probably be dressed against the Bills, though.
Yeah. Rub their face in it. Hey, here's a call from Kerry in Attica. Hello, Kerry, calling from Attica.
How you doing?
Good.
I switched back and forth between you guys and the herd of Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports 1. And Colin Cowherd just came up with a good analogy of Bill Belichick. He said, Bill Belichick is like that little old man that goes to your group, that goes around all the garage sales. You don't notice him. He picks up something here, something there. And then a little while later, you see him on the Antique Roadshow selling that cup for $10,000 that he bought for a dollar. What do you think about that?
Well, give me some examples. Like, who are you thinking of?
Well, like Gillislee.
No, all right, but maybe that'll happen. But how has he done this before? Who are the examples of the bargains that he's picked up that have turned into, you know, great players?
Chris Hogan. Look at him.
I'm looking at him. Not a great player. Had two more catches than he had with the Bills last year.
But he just seems to do better with other teams. You know, he picks up all these diamonds in the rough.
Right. Now, Kerry, I'm
going to make your argument for you. I mean, I'm thinking of a couple of guys who have done that. You know, Wes Welker was originally a Dolphin.
Right.
Flourished in that system with Tom Brady. And I'm trying to think of others. You know, Junior Seau. I don't know. I need examples, I guess. Let me make this argument. I'm not disputing Kerry, but I need some examples of that.
How many of the players that leave New England after being there will go on and have great careers somewhere else and be like a superstar on another team? There aren't many players. And that is because most of their players fit their system. Like, they bring guys in that really fit their system, and they have guys that really can't go on to another team and be a number one guy, you know. So you don't see too many of those players that go into New England that will leave New England and be a superstar somewhere else.
Am I missing somebody obvious, though, to Kerry's point? I mean, Danny Amendola, has he become a great player with the Patriots? Not really. Started with the Rams. Go ahead, Kerry. What were you going to say?
I'm just saying that he gets these players that fit their system that don't fit any other system. He picks them up for cheap, mm-hmm. and he uses them for a couple of years, you know, and then they're done.
But I need examples, though. I'm not disputing that, but I get, unless I'm dense here, I would need some concrete examples. Can you think of anybody that's happened to that with them?
Alan Branch
came from the Bills. He played and started at New England some games. I don't know if he is a major loss or a great player. Who am I missing?
I don't necessarily think that, you know, most of their players are great players. I just think they fit their system and they do what the Patriots asked them to do.
Randy Moss had a great year.
Yeah, Randy Moss obviously was a superstar. Gronkowski is a superstar.
Drafted him.
They drafted him. But guys that they bring in from somewhere else, I don't look at – once they get there, they're not superstars for New England's team. They're just another guy on the roster that will make a good – you know, have a good game or something like that, and it sticks out. Chris Hogan is a real example of that. Like, he was a solid player, went there, and he stuck out. He sticks out in people's minds because of what he did in the playoffs and what, you know, a couple of catches that he had in the Super Bowl. But he wasn't a superstar there. You know, Chris Hogan is not going to be a superstar anywhere. He is a solid player in this league. Mike Gillislee is not going to be a superstar there. He's just a solid player.
I mean, thanks, Kerry. It's a nice analogy. I just need some concrete examples. If someone has any, let me hear them. I'd love to hear them. We're going to talk about the Patriots, believe it or not, when we return. We're going to talk about what's going on with them today, what's happened to them in the past, like we just were, and where they go from here. When we return, Tom Curran from Comcast Sportsnet New England is going to join us in the next hour. Plus, we'll have fake news, real news in the next hour, and more of your phone calls. So come on back for more. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
Update from One Bills Drive. Bills players inside the AdPro Sports Training Center today for day two of the Voluntary Veteran Minicamp. One more day to go tomorrow. Also tomorrow, head coach Sean McDermott and some players will meet with the media to give their thoughts on how this week has gone and preview the draft. That's all coming up tomorrow. We'll carry some of that coverage on our show tomorrow. Meantime, the Bills have yet to decide whether to match the offer sheet presented to running back Mike Gillislee by the New England Patriots. That happened 24 hours ago. Two-year offer worth $6.4 million, including $4 million in the first year, according to sources. The Bills have 5 days to decide whether to match. If they do match, they'll have to come up with $4 million in that first year. If they don't, they get the Patriots' fifth-round pick, number 163 overall, in this year's NFL draft. Also from the Patriots, former tight end Aaron Hernandez, who was serving a life sentence for a murder conviction and just days ago was acquitted of double murder, died early today, hanging himself in his prison cell. He was 27 years old. He was in a single cell in a general population housing unit in the maximum security prison in Massachusetts. Patriots cornerback Malcolm Butler has signed his restricted free agent tender. That means Patriots may be able to trade him. And the Patriots meeting with President Donald Trump at the White House today. The Super Bowl winners, without Tom Brady, who said he had personal family matters, is reason for the absence. At least five other players not attending because of political reasons, according to the Boston Globe. Patriots signed running back James White to a contract late yesterday, a three-year contract extension. We're just a little bit more than a day away from the release of the NFL schedule. It is set for 8 p.m. tomorrow. You can get the schedule as soon as it happens on our website, buffalobills.com. And the Buffalo Bison scheduled to play tonight, 6:05, game two of their three-game series against the Norfolk Tides at Coca-Cola Field. Bison's going to go with right-hander Jared Grubbe on the mound. He is 1-0. Norfolk will go with left-hander Chris Lee. The Bison's held on for a 4-3 win over the Tides yesterday. And that is the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Donald Jones. Coming up in just a few minutes, we're going to talk on the line with Tom Curran from Comcast Sportsnet New England about all of this Patriot news. The Patriots in Washington visiting the White House. And, Donald, did you see the video yet, or have you seen what Gronk did? So, apparently today.
I read up on it.
You read about it?
Yeah.
It's out there. It just happened in the last hour or so. Rob Gronkowski, Western New York's own, barged into the White House press briefing room where White House spokesman Sean Spicer was addressing the media. He's had a rocky couple of months. Rob Gronkowski stuck his head in the door and said, Sean, you need any help? Spicer said, no, I got this, which is debatable. But typical Gronk, good-natured Rob Gronkowski stuck his head in the White House briefing room and interrupted things.
You sure you don't need help?
You sure don't need
help. Looks like
you
need some help.
It would have been great if he kept it going.
Oh, man, that would have been great. Like, you sure?
Good
walked
for him.
Out onto stage. And
good for him.
Man.
That's a lot of. He's a lot of fun. We'll talk about the White House visit with our guest, Tom Curran, coming up in just a couple of minutes. Let's talk with you, though, about the Gillislee decision. That's our Twitter poll. What do you think? What should the Bills do? Should they let the Patriots have them and take their fifth-round pick, or should they try to match it? I think we're in agreement. They should let
them
go.
Let them go. Look, you look at it this way, and somebody even just tweeted me this. I was talking to somebody about it yesterday. You got Mike Gillislee for nothing. You know, off the streets. And now you're getting the fifth round. You got some production from him, 8 touchdowns last year, and now you're getting a fifth round pick for him. You know, so look at it that way. Like, you got him for nothing, and you're getting a fifth round pick for him. I mean, it's you weren't going to pay him over $2 million because he was only going to be your backup. What Sal pointed out, there are only two teams that pay their backup running backs more than $2 million, and you're definitely not going to match it now and pay him $4 million to be your backup running back. So I'm sorry. You got to let him go.
It's kind of, in a way, I don't mean to go all Lion King on you here, but it's like the circle of life in the NFL. You know what I mean? It's the circle of life. Hey, we picked up a guy off the street. Now somebody else wants to pay him, and we'll let him go and pick up a draft pick for him. That's the way it rolls. You know that better than
anybody. I'm surprised if we don't get some Lion King music in our ears coming out soon.
But that's the way it goes in the
NFL. That is the way it goes.
With backup players, these are not foundational. Chris Hogan in the same boat. These are not building block players who we absolutely have to have on this roster or any roster. you know, they're guys. Now, a couple of we ended last hour when the caller, Kerry, mentioned this is what the Patriots, this is what Belichick does, sorts through trash and gets star players. And I, you know, I mentioned I have a hard time identifying anybody. Ooh. A couple of people on Twitter, though, Burrito Bonanza, which is an interesting Twitter handle, and David Sirisunda both say LeGarrette Blount. Okay, I'll give you that to a certain extent. Blount had a big year last year, former Pittsburgh Steeler, came with his own baggage, obviously, you know, last year, and had a productive year. Mm-hmm. So I guess that would be maybe the best example I've heard since that came up about 10 or 15 minutes ago.
I think it's probably, you know, between LeGarrette Blount and I guess you can say Randy Moss, those are the two names that you can say.
Moss was a while ago.
Yeah. Moss was a while ago, and I guess what Wes Welker wasn't there first either.
No, he was a Dolphin.
Yeah, he was a Dolphin, you know, and he went there and he fit well into that system and then obviously moved on from there to go to Denver. But, you know, you're talking about so many players that come into that system. They don't become superstars. They just fit well into that scheme. And it sticks out because, obviously, the Patriots win a lot.
Right.
They're on national TV. So you'll see a guy blow up on national TV, and the next week you don't see anything from that guy. Right. Or you don't see him for the rest of the year. You know, it's just kind of how their system works. That's how this league works. Backups in this league rotate. They go city to city. I mean, that's just how it works. You can't try to pay everybody, and you definitely are not going to pay the running back position. Like, and I keep saying this, the starting running backs in this league are having trouble finding or getting big contracts. DeMarco Murray could not get a big contract in Dallas, which is why he left there. Now he's in Tennessee. He's still one of the best running backs, but they are not paying these guys that much money. You have LeSean McCoy, who was making almost, you know, $9 million. You weren't going to pay your backup running back that type of money.
And they're the only team that does that. The Bills pick up Lorenzo Alexander late in free agency, goes to the Pro Bowl, has all those sacks, double-digit sacks. You know, you could argue that he pretty much came off the trash heap. A couple of teams had given up on Lorenzo Alexander. Zach Brown a year ago, the Bills got a good year out of him.
I mean, that's and for, you know, obviously Doug Whaley gets the blame for everything being the general manager, but you have to give him some credit for things like that, bringing guys in off the streets that were somewhat productive. We had the same thing with the wide receiver that ended up signing with the Steelers. That was here last year.
And Justin Hunter.
Yeah, Justin Hunter. He brought him in off the streets, and you got, what, 4 touchdowns out of him. He's bringing all of these guys off of the streets because guys keep going down and they're injured, which happens throughout the course of a season. And you get guys to actually be productive. You had Lorenzo and Zach end up in the Pro Bowl. And, you know, you had, obviously, Lorenzo is back on a bigger contract. But you have to give Doug some credit for things like that. Now you're talking about Mike Gillisley, who he brought in here for nothing. You got some production out of him, and now you get a 5th-round pick. Oh, by the way, you only had 6 picks. So, this has not happened yet, but I don't think they're going to end up matching it, and I think they're going to end up getting that 5th-round pick. And now you have 7 picks. I mean, you have to look at it from both sides of it and give the guys some credit.
A couple of tweets on this. Drew Jacks tweets in, "Match it," in all caps. "Stop letting the Patriots use our guys against us. It makes the Bills look foolish. They can find the money someplace."
It's the emotion. That's what we're talking about. Just everybody's emotional about it being the Patriots. If this was the Jacksonville Jaguars, then we wouldn't be talking about this. If this was any other team, we wouldn't be talking about this. But because it's the Patriots, because I guess they have a history of, you know, taking players from the Bills, then
I don't know that there's a deep history of that.
It's not a deep Hogan history, but that's what everybody – that's what's in everybody's mind, Chris Hogan.
Jonathan Rode tweets in, "With Gillisley gone, what's the chance of bringing back Carlos Williams?" Donald, I'll let you handle that softball right down the middle of the plate.
But knock that one out of the park. There's no chance I'm bringing back Carlos Williams. I think it's going to be a draft pick. I honestly think that they're going to end up just drafting one.
And here's one. Miss Cheddar tweets in, "Corey Dillon." Well, okay. Corey Dillon was troubled, and the Bengals were looking to move him, and they moved him to New England, and he had a couple of productive years. You know, I don't know if he became a star with New England. Here's an interesting tweet. Derek tweets in, "Pull the trigger and put Andrew Peters back on the radio." first time anybody's ever tweeted that.
That is the first. That is the first. Petey's probably listening, too.
Oh, yeah, and he's probably walking through the door.
Yeah.
Here's a call from Kevin in Syracuse. Hello, Kevin. Welcome. You're on the air with us.
You know, one thing about Buffalo, man, they will always squeeze some sort of hockey reference into strictly supposed to be my Bills. You know what? I am ecstatic that when you got Adrian Peterson out there, you got other star running backs, that we were able to get this 5th-round pick. You know, not only do we get a fifth-round pick, we don't get the bottom of the litter fifth-round pick. We get a new 163rd. So I'm going to wait till that very last day. I'm not going to just, you know, scream out, yeah, you could take them. Take them on the very last day. Give me your fifth-round pick. Leaving New England with just two threes or four, condition or whatever those compensatory fives, a six and a seven, and I could continue to build my team. I have absolute faith in our scouting staff on how to judge and pick up talent. You know, what frustrates me is that, you know, people get so emotional, and sometimes it's not even based on logic. Mm-hmm. You know, nobody wants to keep when they picked up the Williams kid, who shouldn't have been in the fifth round. I knew then that Gillislee Days was numbered.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because that his contract was ending. His is beginning. So what can we get from a person off the street? So I think this is perfect.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like people really think that Doug and everybody in management made this decision not knowing that a team could come in here and take Mike Gillislee away, like, and are shocked that it's happened now. Like, yeah. Oh, my God, they're doing this, so right. We need to match it. No, it's not like that. Like, they knew they were going to give him a lower-round tender. You had a guy who gave you 8 touchdowns last year. You give him a lower-round tender, there's going to be a team that calls up and says, we probably should at least give this guy an offer and see if the Bills want to match it, you know, because he did produce for you 8 touchdowns. So now you pick up – you get an extra fifth pick, a fifth rounder. I think you got to take that.
Yeah, and again, to your point, this is not a whoops, we didn't know that would happen. You take that risk when you put the first round or the fifth round tender on them. You know, you know they knew what the deal was. They knew that there was a chance they would lose them. Did they know it would be New England? No, but they're one of the 31 that could do it.
Right.
So, yeah, you have to take that into consideration, and that's no reason to make moves. Fear that – the Patriots or somebody else, but especially the Patriots might jump on it and take him. They set their value, they put the tag on him, and they're ready to deal with the consequences.
Now, what happens, and what does Bill Belichick think now if the Bills go and say, you know, we're going to match this and pay him $4 million? Bill Belichick knows in his mind every time this happens, they're going to try and match it. Like, that's what we're talking about. When you keep if you find yourself in that position where you're letting another team dictate what you want to do. Bill Belichick is sitting there with a cigar in his mouth, and he'll keep on giving offers.
You know
giving
what
offer
I think
sheets.
Bill Belichick thinks if the Bills match that offer, I think he thinks to himself, with or without a cigar, he thinks, good. I'm glad I made Buffalo do that. For
yeah, exactly.
Backup running back. We win, right?
We win, yeah. Right. So, I mean, it's the look, they're going to make an offer sheet. If they don't make an offer sheet, it is what it is, man. They're one of the 32 teams. The Bills knew what they were doing when they gave him that lower round tender. And maybe they did just dangle it out there and say, you know what, we're going to dangle this out in front of you and see if we can get an extra fifth-round pick out of it. What are the odds that they end up drafting a running back with that pick?
Well, they're going to if they get that pick, if they let him go, they're going to have 3 fifth-round picks.
They should draft one with that pick, and I hope that guy becomes a superstar.
What are the odds of that happening?
Right.
Hey, Donald, I want to switch gears a little bit. We're going to have Tom Curran from Comcast New England in a minute. To talk about all of this going on with the Patriots. And part of that conversation will be about Aaron Hernandez.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a tragic story. It's a terrible story. Found dead in his prison cell in Massachusetts today. Former NFL star who just a couple of days ago was acquitted in a double murder trial, but he was also sentenced to life in prison for a murder conviction. Just a terrible story, a terrible end to an awful story. You spent a little time in New England with the Patriots, mm-hmm. and, in fact, it turns out you were right next to Aaron Hernandez in that locker room, huh?
Yeah, he was, you know, he was right next to me, and Gronk was on the other side. And so I had two totally different personalities uh-huh. that I had to deal with there. Aaron Hernandez was a very quiet guy when I was there. We talked, but he's a very quiet guy. I mean, you really wouldn't get a sense that he had done everything that he had done. Now, on the other hand, obviously, I know guys from Connecticut, and so they would tell me how he was back where he's from and all
from
of that
Bristol,
stuff.
From Bristol, Connecticut.
Yeah, he's from Bristol. But, you know, the tragedy in this is there are families that have really been affected by this. Obviously, his family, his own daughter, is, you know, now she's going to grow up without it. She was already not going to be able to see her father.
Ever. He was life in prison without
He was life in prison, right. So the only time she could see him was if she went to prison to see him. But now you know, her father is gone. And so she's the one that really has to suffer, and his family has to suffer. And then you have families of Olden Lloyd, the families of the two other guys, even though he beat that one, I don't know what happened. But all of these families have their family members gone, but Aaron Hernandez is the big story in this. For me, you know, the big issue in this is, and I'm not giving anybody a pass, I have no sympathy for him. I have the sympathy for all of these families that have really been affected. For me, the big issue, though, is mental illness. And we talked about this in the office. I think that, you know, we really have to pay attention to mental illness and these guys that and these people that are celebrities and athletes and whatever it is, they still deal with real life issues. You know, Aaron Hernandez, when his father died, when he was 15, 16 years old, is really when he started to get in trouble. And I think that's when the mental illness really came to surface. And so you have a guy that's doing all of these things, but when you peel back the layers of that onion, I think it really started way back then when his father died, because even though his father was in the streets and all of that stuff, I'm sure he somewhat kept Aaron Hernandez in check. But then once his father died, he had nobody to keep him in check, and then he started to get in trouble.
What you talk about is goes beyond a football player. I mean, this goes on all the time, right,
yeah,
in regular life. But I guess as from football fans' standpoint, I guess my standpoint too, we think often like, man, how could he revert to that thug life, to that life in the streets? He had everything working for him. He's playing on a championship team, making a ton of money, being very productive, had wealth and fame and fortune and friends. And how could he revert to that? That's that's the part to me in this whole tragic story of Aaron Hernandez. That's the part that I just can't get my arms around.
You know, and it's hard. I think you have to kind of be from – now, Bristol, I'm not going to – I've been – obviously, Bristol is where ESPN is.
Right.
Bristol's not the worst place in the world to live. He grew up in some life and been through a lot of different things. But when you are from that environment, you are from those inner city types of environment where you grow up, and this is all you see is, you know, drug dealers and people dying and all of that stuff, it's kind of hard to separate yourself. We see it all throughout the different leagues. When these guys get to the NFL, they still have those friends from back home. They still have that life that they just – now it's just you have a little bit of money. It doesn't mean you don't go back home to, you know, you go back home and it's like, man, I'm that dude now. Like, I just got money. You just see me on TV, but I'm still, this is still my friends. This is still my life. We talked about it. I mean, I have, you know, one of my friends from college was killed last week, shot in the head, you know, and has a funeral today. 20, 30,000 people at his funeral because of how popular he was, because of how good he was in sports. A guy that, you know, went to junior college, then went to Purdue, graduated from Purdue, and still reverted back to that thug life, you know, just couldn't separate himself from it. It's a real thing. When you come from that lifestyle, it is very hard to separate yourself from that life.
In the NFL, my condolences for your friend back there in Jersey who didn't play in the NFL, right?
No,
but in the NFL, Donald, I'd have a hard time thinking of any profession that sets up more programs, more support systems, more people who are entirely devoted to keeping an eye on players. Obviously, you know, there are security people who do that, helping players, providing assistance with housing and life choices. And they have the rookie symposium. They have ongoing continuing education during the course of the year. You know, just a couple of weeks ago, we had Troy Vincent in here. I mean, that's part of his job is player support. The NFL does that, I think, more than – look, they don't have that for auto workers at the Ford plant in Woodlawn.
Right.
So how does that I mean, they don't have it to this extent. How does that slip through the cracks? And what more can you do is I guess what I'm trying to say.
You know, I don't think there's really any more that you can do. I think, you know, and this is with any issue, any addiction, whatever it is, you know, it won't change unless that person wants to change it. You know, so the NFL will have all of these programs in place. And we're talking about support systems that, you know, going back to school, support systems in business
and
media, all of that stuff, right? But the players themselves have to really go out and seek that. They have to go out and find it and say, this is what I want to do when I'm in the offseason, you know. But players don't do that because the players are making whatever it is that they're making. So when they get in, a lot of these players, when they get into the offseason, they just go back home and you have normal life. They don't seek out extra. They don't think about, you know, life after the league. They don't think about, you know, I have these real issues that I probably should get looked at. So maybe I should seek out our player personnel guy. Maybe I should seek out these different programs. They just don't think about it. They don't seek it out themselves. The league will put it in place, but they're not going to walk you all the way down to the water and say, drink it too. Like, you got to go seek that out yourself.
I hope, and I know that to a certain extent the union, the Players Association, looks after players, try to set themselves up. And some of these programs, they set up some of these programs, but you know, maybe they're not doing enough because there's always, I believe you can speak from a player's perspective, there's always going to be a natural suspicion if the team or the league sets up a program. You know, you're thinking, well, what are they going to be asking me? And how's this going to impact, you know, my on the roster next year? If I confess that I, you know, have suicidal thoughts or something, you know, and they're going to think differently about me.
And that's the truth.
You would hope that the union provides for the players, does enough for the players, that,
and
that set up these systems so that it's not confessing or, you know, confiding in your employer.
And that's the truth. I mean, I've talked to many players throughout the NFL and these different teams that have team psychologists for them to talk to, and all of them, all of the players that I've talked to say, like, I'm not talking to them. Like, why would I go talk to this doctor?
Why would I tell them that I have, you know, nightmares and feelings?
Right.
You know?
Why would I tell them? They actually work for the team. Yeah. Like, I don't care if it's doctor, you know, patient privilege. You work for the team.
Yeah.
So you're probably going to go back and say, listen, you know, I can't tell you exactly what's going on with this player, but I can say this.
Yeah.
It's a little bad right now, you know. So guys are scared to go and talk to these different people. So I hope and we should probably, you know, talk to Lorenzo about it because he's involved in the union and see what programs they really do have to support the players. If they don't, they really need to get some programs on the players' union side so that these guys can really have that support system, something that they feel comfortable in going to talk to.
And let me say this, it's not just the union either. You know who I think bears some responsibility here? The agents
who
take a cut of the money these guys make. I don't know who Aaron Hernandez's agent is, but he should have been all over this before it progressed to the point of, you know, 6-7 years ago where he's involved in a couple of different homicides allegedly. He should have been all over that. He should have identified, I got a guy who needs some help here, some extra help, some extra supervision. I got to hire somebody to watch Aaron Hernandez if that's what it takes.
And
the agents deserve a share, I think, of the burden of protecting players who need it from themselves.
Aaron Hernandez was a unique talent at the tight end position. Coming out of college, he dropped to the fourth round in the draft because of troubles that he had off the field. So as his agent, you know this guy has been in trouble off the field, which is why he dropped. So, yeah, you should look into some different things and stay on top of your player if you really care about that player. But the problem is that these agents don't really care. The problem is that a lot of these agents, all they care about is that 3% that they get from your contract before taxes. That's all they really care about.
Not all of them.
Not all of them, but a lot of them, you know.
That's
really what they care about. A lot of what they care about is, you know, I can get you this Nike deal. I can sit back and just collect my checks. You know, my family is fine. If something happens, we'll go ahead out there and put a statement. You know, if you come to us and say, you know, so-and-so, I need help because this is what I'm dealing with, then we'll seek it out. But if you don't come to us, I'm just going to sit back and collect these checks, and that's really it.
It's a sad story with a terrible end. Aaron Hernandez found dead in his prison cell in Massachusetts today, what is believed to be a suicide, allegedly hanging himself in his prison cell early today. We're back with more in a moment. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
John Murphy, Donald Jones. We're presented by Napa Auto Parts, coming to you live from One Bills Drive. We've been talking a lot about the Patriots in the last 24 hours. Joining us right now on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, the Patriots and NFL insider for Comcast Sports New England, Tom Curran joins us. Tom, it's John Murphy and Donald Jones. Thanks for joining us. I'm sure you're busy. All of a sudden, it's been nothing but Patriots news the last day or so, huh?
Oh, my gosh. It comes like this in these little flurries. Donald can tell you it's quiet, and then bing, bang, bong, everything at once. And, of course, tragic news mixed in up here as well with the Hernandez. And so hard for folks to process exactly how to feel about something like that, along with, you know, all the regular football transactions that are going on.
Tom, I saw something where the Patriots didn't really want to give any statement, you know, that had to do with this whole Aaron Hernandez situation. Is that because they're trying to really separate themselves from that whole thing?
Yes. It is. You know, I remember the day that he was arrested, he actually went to the facility prior to his arrest, and he was turned away that day. Later on, they Robert Kraft did a sit-down interview and spoke about how he was duped. The Patriots have tried very hard to divorce themselves from it. Donald, I'm not sure if you were there in 13. You may have been.
I was.
Donald just told us he had the locker next to him for a month or two.
And, you know, I remember Bill's comments on the first day of training camp were really, really just well-spoken, well-thought-out comments that pretty much encapsulated everything that you could have. And this was during the Odin Lloyd, in the wake of the Odin Lloyd arrest for that and the later conviction. So they don't want to be married up with the conversation about this player. I mean, what were your recollections, Donald?
Well, my recollection of him was he just was a very quiet person. I just remember, you know, the day before we left, because that whole situation where, you know, we woke up the next morning and he was going to the stadium, the day before that, we had our last meeting, and Bill Belichick was like, listen, I don't care who you are. If I see you in the news, I'm going to cut you. You won't be on this team. And then the next day, there was this, you know, and it was crazy.
Yeah. Hey, Tom, we were – and this is not an attempt to assign blame, but more to look at, you know, solutions. What, if anything, can the teams or the league, the union, or maybe the agents do when you've clearly got a guy who is on the verge of going off the rails like this? What can be done?
It's a great – you know, it's a fair question. I mean – if you look at Hernandez, one of the definitions of a psychopath is the ability to be charming and to con people. And I think Donald could allude to that. You know, he probably spent more time with Aaron, even though I covered him throughout his career. Mm-hmm. I didn't have ever a very long conversation with him. Think about this. He played in the Super Bowl in February of 2012. Less than 4 months later, he was at the scene and perhaps the trigger man, though he was acquitted, in a double murder. Mm-hmm. Less than 2 months after that, the Patriots gave him a $40 million contract, and his first act was to kick back $50,000 to Robert Kraft for his appreciation of taking a chance on someone who was able to turn his life around and make sure that that was given to the charitable foundation, because Aaron thought that was important to him as the soon-to-be father of a young daughter who was settling in. Less than a year after that, he shot Odin Lloyd in an industrial park. So there weren't a lot of – he was a charming psychopath. Mm-hmm. But additionally, just a couple days before the Baltimore Ravens AFC championship game that the Patriots played, he was in a vehicle that was pulled over on Route 93 just outside of Boston, riding shotgun in a car that was going 110 miles an hour. He leaned over and said to the state trooper that, you know, I got this under control. The Patriots knew that he was leading a pretty messed up life. I mean, he told Belichick, you know, after the double murder, alleged double murder, that Bradley was after him. Well, Bradley was after him because, believing Bradley's testimony, he shot him in the head.
Right.
So, this guy, I mean, I think the Patriots may have, at least their security team could have, probably ferreted out more information as to just how screwed up this kid was. But he was a con man of the highest order. And I don't know what else you can do when you're dealing with someone like that.
Yeah. Tom Curran is our guest.
That's my answer. Sorry.
Yeah,
I don't have an answer.
We're at a loss, too. So let's turn to more mundane NFL matters, Tom, and this one strikes directly at the Buffalo Bills. The offer sheet for Mike Gillisley. What do the Patriots see to make that kind of put that kind of an offer sheet out there? And how is that being received in New England?
Well, I think it's being received more as a death knell for LeGarrette Blount's tenure here than anything else. Mm-hmm. Gillisley was talked up big by Bill Belichick during the regular season, as was he talked up a lot by the defenders. So if the defenders are talking about it, then Belichick and Matt Patricia made a point of mentioning it. So they had high respect for him. I don't understand why the Bills don't do a better job. What was the tender on him?
Fifth round. $1.7 million. Yeah.
I mean, what's the difference between 1.7 and 3.9 if you need him?
Yeah, well, yeah, we've talked about that, and we've kind of come to the conclusion. $166
million cap. It's cuckoo.
Well, maybe they decide they don't need him. Maybe that, you know, I guess we're settled on this is the value the Bills had, and they're not going to, you know, follow what the value that somebody else wants to put on one of their players.
And that's a great way to illustrate it. I mean, there's players that the Patriots have on their roster who have less value to them than they would have to someone else. Kyle Van Noy comes over from Detroit where he's a scrub and he makes contributions on the Patriots. So every team certainly does. Just because Gillislee may have been poached from the Bills doesn't mean the Bills have to be kicking rocks about it. You're right about that, John. But the value would be that he would be their big back complementary to their tweener back, which I'm guessing would be Rex Burkhead. James White is their pass-catching back, and Deion Lewis is, you know, a sub-back who can do a little bit of both and provides just exquisite short-area quickness that you're not going to see.
I mean, do we see all of these guys suiting up on game day? Or?
Geez, I don't know, man. You were here when Bolden was here. They love
right.
Bolden as a special teamer, too, so he's still on the roster.
Mm-hmm.
Something's got to give at some point. You have to keep, obviously, Burkhead, Gillislee, and James White are going to be here. I would think you can go four deep with Deion Lewis, but is Bolden a luxury item as well? Plus, you have this kid, DJ Foster, who's kind of a pseudo-slot slash running back that they took out of Arizona State. So what happens will be interesting to see, but certainly Gillislee is going to, at the very least, probably be the solution to the LeGarrette Blount situation where you have a guy who, you know, had a terrific season. He's a good guy, good locker room guy, but he's looking for more money than they're willing to spend on him.
Tom Curran, our guest, Patriots insider, NFL insider for Comcast Sports New England. Tom, Malcolm Butler, are we anticipating a trade now that he has signed his offer sheet?
I'm still trying to make sure that seems to be what's going to happen. You know, the Patriots would be in a great spot if they have Stephon Gilmore or Malcolm Butler as their two corners. But if they're going to package him up and say, look, we don't want to spend $12 million on Stephon and $3.9 on Malcolm, especially after writing a check, which is what you do once you sign a guy. So they just wrote a check for that $40 million or however much was guaranteed. That's a lot of money to shell out at the cornerback position. So we will see. Just to review on Butler, Patriots traded their third-round pick and their 32nd overall pick to New Orleans in exchange for Brandon Cooks and a fourth-round pick. If they were to trade Butler now and get that 32nd overall pick back, then it would be as if that was a placeholder type of collateral. And people have said they don't think that would be a fair trade for the Patriots. I think it would be a fair trade because Butler, you have to re-sign immediately, and Cooks, you get extra time.
Huh. Tom, if they trade Butler away, I mean, Logan Ryan is not there anymore. Who's going to be
right.
the other cornerback?
Yeah, Ryan was a great tackler, too, and they had excellent tackling in that secondary, especially all the way through at both corners. So the next corner up would be Eric Rowe, who they signed away from Philadelphia, taller corner. So he's about 6'2", much bigger than Butler, certainly not as competitive and scrappy as Butler. Then they have Cyrus Jones, who was a second-round pick out of Alabama last year. They have a tiny kid named Jonathan Jones, who is very good, but he's just undersized, but he runs like the wind. So those would be their options. They also have a kid named Justin Coleman, who would be entering his third year. Seems destined to be an okay NFL player, but a fringe guy.
One more question for you, Tom, and this is from our perspective, outside looking in. And it's not our original perspective here. It's been said that it appears the Patriots, with the Gilmore signing, with some of these other moves, are loading up for the final push, getting all they can out of Tom Brady and maybe even Bill Belichick. Do you view it as that? Are we looking at the last assemblage of talent to make a run at one or maybe a couple more championships?
I look at it as standard fare. I mean, you can go back to 2011, that offseason after the lockout ended. They immediately signed Haynesworth and Ocho. That was an effort right then to make something happen. They were proactive in replacing Welker with Amendola. They jumped out and got Hogan last year. They just are so interesting in the way that they attack the offseason. And what I think will start to happen is we might see more and more trades going on, guys, in the future, because the Patriots have now gotten into this business of practically leasing players, finding players who are nearing the end of their contracts, like Coney Ealy, and a couple other guys that they've signed, Brandon Cooks, and making a deal to get that guy in at the end of their contract and maybe get a year out of him and re-sign him, or maybe get a year out of him and send him on its way. It's really a different model that they're starting to employ. So that's what I think a lot of the transactions are about as well. They're trying to create a new personnel model in some ways.
It's going to be interesting to follow. Tom, thanks for spending a few minutes with us here this afternoon to talk about all of these issues. We appreciate it.
Okay, thanks, guys. Talk to you soon.
Okay, Tom Curran is a Patriots NFL insider for Comcast Sports New England with some thoughts on what the Patriots have been up to recently. Tom joined us on the Subway Fresh Tank Hotline. Subway, eat fresh. We're back with more in a moment. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
What have we learned? It is presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. Well, we had a pretty good show. Leonard Johnson joined us in the first hour, Bills cornerback, who has been around the league a little bit with New England, spent most of his career with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, last season with the Carolina Panthers. Under Sean McDermott, now he's with the Bills, and we talked with cornerback Leonard Johnson about his experience with Bills now head coach Sean McDermott.
I'm proud of him, man. You know, I expressed that several times, you know, seeing him as a defensive coordinator and then now seeing him in position to run the team, you know, it's crazy, you know. I'm pretty excited. I would like to say, you know, him and I have a really good relationship. You know, when I got to Carolina, you know, I was on PUP. And I was coming off an Achilles injury, and he just kept me engaged and kept me in tune with everything was going on and made me feel important, you know. And for me not to be involved with anything that the team was, you know, doing at that time, I felt a part of, you know, the team and the organization, you know, and he played a big part of that.
Leonard Johnson on his experience with Sean McDermott. He joined us in the first hour. Dan Shaka was with us. What is that, 1 o'clock, I believe it was, right? 1 o'clock hour, the man behind Our Lads NFL Scouting Services. Dan Shaka on the draft, and his mock draft only has one quarterback, Mitch Trubisky, in the first round. Trubisky going to the Houston Texans down around 25. Dan Shaka talked about that, just one quarterback in his mock draft first round.
They're just guilty of it, different teams that, you know, their emotion because of the fan base and what have you, that can't take over, you know, over reason. You know what I mean? You've got to keep a head. These guys aren't – these quarterbacks are all second-round guys, really. I mean, they're none of them should go in the first round, but Trubisky is the most accurate, makes the best decisions. You know, that's why we got him in there.
Dan Shaka. From Our Lads Guy. Interesting. These quarterbacks, he said, all of them are second-round talent.
Or maybe even back. I mean,
but, you know, that's not slamming them either. And that, I believe, you know, Dan Shaka is not out to make a big splash or to get attention. That's his honest assessment. I think he's a qualified observer based on his work over the years. But it does say something when we all know he says they're all second-round talent. There's going to be a couple of first-rounders at least in this
and
year's draft.
He even said it himself. You know, he knows there's going to be a couple of first-rounders. That's just the league we're in. I mean, quarterback probably is the most important position in all of sports. And if you don't have one, it's hard to win without a solid quarterback and be a consistent contender, you know, a team that's always in the playoffs or at least near the playoffs. And so teams will reach to find that guy. Like every year you keep on swinging until you hit a home run, and it takes them a while to hit a home run, especially with these quarterbacks coming out of college now. It takes them a little while to hit a home run. It even does these guys a disservice to their own career because they come in and have to play right away, you know, and they're expected to win right away. And it's hard for them to do that because they've never played any type of pro-style system, never even called a play in the huddle. Now you got to come into this league and do it that way. It's tough.
Our Twitter poll today dealt with really the news from yesterday, about Mike Gillisley. What would you prefer the Bills do with Mike Gillisley? That was our Twitter poll. We had more than 420 votes in today. And most of you, pretty overwhelmingly, 69% of you say, you know what, let him walk, take the Patriots' fifth-round draft pick. 31% say match the Patriots' offer, $4 million this year, 6.4 over 2 years. So it's like more than 2-1 say let Gillisley go. I have to say, Donald, I'm heartened by that. I like that. I think that shows that there's a certain segment of our fan base, listeners of this show, who have thought it through. No, I think that's good. I, you know, you can't let the emotion rule you.
Yeah, yeah. You know, if and we talked about this, if we would have done this Twitter poll yesterday, it probably would be reversed, you know, and you'd have like 80% of the people say, you got to match it, you got to match it.
Right.
But you'd let everybody think overnight, and it's like, all right, it probably makes sense to let that guy go and go ahead and pick up another draft pick, which we need another draft pick, and go ahead and draft one. You have to, and this is why these guys get paid the big bucks. They have to sit and really think about this stuff 24/7. And, you know, I hope that this was the right decision. I think it was we'll see if they end up matching it. If not, I think that's the right decision. Go ahead and get a draft pick and move on.
Especially the fact that it's the Patriots.
That's what makes
it. That's what gets people's.
Yeah, that's what gets their
emotions
going.
Boiling. Yeah, right.
But you try to take the emotion out of it and think, you got to be smart about this. They put a fifth-round tender on him for a reason. We don't know what that reason is. Obviously, they knew what they were doing. They knew the possibilities, and this is how it's worked out now.
Hey, tomorrow's show is going to be interesting, fun. I hope it is the third and final day of this week's voluntary minicamp. And after that, right around 2 o'clock, head coach Sean McDermott will address the media, and we'll pick up that live on the show tomorrow, plus hopefully some player interviews after the workout tomorrow. That's coming up tomorrow. Jonathan Williams, who stands to gain if Mike Gillisley goes to the Patriots, he'll be joining us on the show tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Plus, the schedule comes out tomorrow night anyway. We'll preview that on the show tomorrow, so make sure you come back at 12 noon. I want to thank our presenting sponsor, Napa Auto Parts. Find your local Napa store online at NapaOnline.com. Our intercom board op today, Ryan Gates. Production assistance from J.J. Torito, George Blass, Jeff Koltenek, Thomas Hollander, James Donovan. Our producer is Jay Harris. And we're back on the air tomorrow at noon with the John Murphy Show presented by Napa on Buffalo Bills Radio.